Good evening, and welcome to the July 14th meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present. And we'll begin with a moment of silence. I've begun recognizing community people who were important to Morro Bay in the moment of silence, and there's a couple lately. Vernon Crass, a moving force in Morro Bay's incorporation in 1964 and one of the city's first councilmen. He was also president of the Chamber of Commerce in 1962. He passed away recently. And also Ralph Agee, who was active with the Morro Bay Salvation Army, 39 Plus Dance Club, and the local political group Advocates for a Better Community. So let's dedicate the moment of silence to the memory of these people who were involved in our community. Thank you. Okay, and we will start with the pledge. And I asked somebody who doesn't work here anymore, Mr. Bill Boucher, to lead us in the pledge tonight.
And one last time, good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the council. And for the members of the audience, one more time with feeling, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And if you Thank just you. Stay there a minute, just stay there for 1 minute, because a lot of us got to celebrate with your party at the city and your other parties, but I just want everybody.
It was a retirement party last week.
Thank you.
Rick? Well, I hope your golf game improves now.
So I was going to have to. I have no excuses, do I?
Thanks for everything. We'll miss you a lot, Bill.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
And I bid you a good evening.
Have fun. One of the things that Bill did complete before he left, along with some assistance from other people, was the Harbor Walk. And we had our ribbon cutting last week and received a wonderful plaque. It's from the California Trails and Greenways Conference. It's a merit award for the project, which was really kind of wonderful. I mean, we're all enjoying it, but it's being recognized by other people, too, and that's really special. So that was one of my announcements. Oh, I'm sorry. I need to get my merchant announcement first. We have David Ross here from Carousel Taffy, and he's going to tell us all about his store.
Madam Mayor, council members, city staff, my name is David Ross, Carousel Taffy, 845 Embarcadero. I just wanted to say that, I've been in Morro Bay since 1959, went through school, graduated in 65, and luckily for me, I had the opportunity of going to work for a local company, Mission Linen Supply. I worked for about 10 years. Back to the high school thing. I really enjoyed that, Morro Bay. We had a ball. But about 30 years ago, I bought a restaurant, and I've been in business for, 30 years now. Now into the candy business. Thank goodness out of the restaurant business. But, it was just a couple of weeks ago that, I've been so busy with business and everything else, and one morning I woke up and I was just kind of fed up and uptight, and I decided to get in the car and take a ride. So I went out to the Elfin Forest, just meandered around, come back to Morro Bay and through the state park and the golf course and down Morro Bay Boulevard, and I saw all the shops there that I didn't even know was there, and up Main Street, and this time I don't have blinders on. I'm just looking around to see what's here. Then down to the Embarcadero. Believe me, this is the first time in years that I went all the way from the South End all the way out to the Rock, and watched the watch the kayaks and the sailboats and the fishermen coming in and out and the surfers out there and the beach that nobody ever talks about. We've got a beautiful beach there. But, you know, we're talking about people doing their stay vacations now. And I would thoroughly encourage anyone that's here, local or tourists or whatever, take that full day and, what, 2 or 3 gallons?
...of that advertising was funded. And the board wrote, on behalf of the Board of Common Sense California and our City Regional Task Force, it is with great pleasure that we award you a catalyst grant in the amount of $2,500. The board was impressed with your desire to utilize civic engagement to approach an issue faced by many municipalities in these difficult budgetary times. Regarding the grant payment, we would be happy to send it to your attention, made out to the appropriate government agency. So I thought that was really nice, the recognition that we are doing a good job in involving our citizens in our government. So thank you all for participating in that, too. We had a really good turnout. Surf Cab is operating now in Morro Bay. However, they haven't got their second driver online yet. So there's still one driver, and he tends to hang out at the airport most of the time because that's where most of his business comes from. So you can call him. The number, I have it, is 748-2202, and he will respond by cell phone, and he'll come get you, but it may take a little bit until he gets back from the airport. He will eventually have another driver online, and then service will be much quicker. The other thing I wanted to say was, if you didn't catch it on TV, and it was a rather long meeting, so I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't watch it all the way through, the council did have a goal-setting meeting, and we came up with 20 goals altogether, 6 top ones, and I thought I'd at least share those with you, because as we go through our deliberations and decision-making from now on, we're going to try and focus on those goals and the decisions that we make. So our top 6 were decide who will deliver fire services. Obviously, we'll work on that on Saturday. Provide funding for competitive salaries and encourage retention of all city employees. Establish new revenue sources. Repair and or replace failing infrastructure. Form a redevelopment agency. And develop ways to be attractive to businesses. So those are the goals we're going to focus on. We have others that are very important also, but those were the top 6. And we're going to try and keep focusing on those goals until we start accomplishing them. I think that's all I had. Betty, announcements?
Yes, just to follow up to the workshop on CAL FIRE Saturday, the next chance for input will be in August or September, I believe, when it comes back to City Council as a public hearing. So that's not the end of it. There will be chance for another
Absolutely.
Input.
Yes.
Also, and there may be someone that's going to speak to this, but I'll just quickly say, in case there's no one in the audience that's going to speak to the garden fundraiser, our community garden out by Del Mar Park, next Sunday, I believe it's like from 1 to 4, $12 tickets for adults, $8 tickets for youth to help offset some of the costs of the community garden will be this coming Sunday. And then the last thing, I just want to note, I think everybody got one of these magazines in our driveway. It's called The Home Pro. And towards the end of it, it listed all the cities in the county and how much it costs for them to have secondary units and guest houses, and then how much our fees are for that. And it was real interesting for me to see that comparison. We pay some of the lowest fees. I think ours was only $4,900. Some people charge as much as, I think it was in the 30s, for their 34,000 there's the Paso Robles. So if you haven't seen that, it's a nice comparison to see what you're getting and that maybe we do need to raise some of our fees in town.
Okay, Bill?
For it, and it'll break. But if these things happen, these are the precautions that you have to take. And you can get further information on this by going to www.epa.com. It gives you a whole list of precautions and things you're supposed to do when one of these light bulbs break. Also, when the light bulbs burn out, Home Depot has a program where they accept them all now. You're not supposed to just throw them in your trash. So just trying to get the word out. Further educate yourself by going to www.epa.com. Thanks.
Madam Mayor, let me just, for those of you who are ignorant like I am, CFL bulb is those fluorescent bulbs that we've all been buying lately. I just thought I'd throw that out because I wasn't sure what CFL actually stands for.
I thought it was Canadian Football League until I heard that.
Are you certain, I'll start my announcements by just asking, are you certain that's not EPA.gov?
It was EPA.com when I went to it.
Okay, could be some other group. Well, I enjoy my CFLs, and I knew about the mercury, and I asked somebody, what do you think about all this mercury in these CFLs? They said, well, get rid of your thermometer, too. But my electric bills come down, and I know that PG&E is encouraging the use because of the energy problems in California. I don't think I had anything else on that. There's something else, but I forget it. So,
okay. It's department heads this time. It's Harbor and Parks and Rec and Public Services. Let's start with you, Bruce. Very brief, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Rob Livick and Dylan Wade will give our department update.
Okay.
Let's try this one.
Tonight we're going to do a show and tell. We thought that would be more fun.
Okay. Oh, yay. The signs.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council. I just want to bring in one of our new signs that was just delivered to our corporation yard last week, and these signs will be going up all over town after many years of discussing and getting the copy down and the color right and the logo and the graphics. They're finally here. We're waiting on a couple pieces of hardware to get them up. They were supposed to be delivered today. We're meeting with Caltrans in the morning to get the first ones installed on the state right-of-way at Highway 1 near San Bernardo Creek and on Highway 41 near Ironwood. Those will be the first two that will go up. Then South Bay Boulevard and Highway 1 at Yerba Buena will be the next, and then all over town. So just wanted to show these to City Council and the community.
Beautiful.
These are our new directional signs telling everybody where they can get services in Morro Bay.
Great. Cool.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Real briefly, I'll talk a little bit about the roundabout project. That's on hold, pending real estate negotiations, so we're working through that process, but we're cleaned up and should be in pretty decent shape to get through the summer. And then on the fire station, they're making great progress. You should walk by and take a look sometime. But they're
festival session. Session two begins next Monday, and if anybody still wants to participate, we have about two or three more openings. This is a big weekend. We've got Rock to Pier Run. So if anybody who has not registered for Rock to Pier Run and wants to run from Morro Bay out to the Cayucos Pier, starts at 7:45 in the morning, and we can register you there at the community center or on site Saturday morning. We also have the ASA coming into town with the men's fast pitch tournament that'll be held out at Lila Kaiser Park. So that'll be, I think they've got somewhere around 20 teams, so it should be rather a lot of action out there. Our kids' camp is going into the fourth week. This week is Medieval and Talent Show. And one last bit of interest, the Recreation Parks Commission will be meeting in August, the first Thursday, and our public hearing for that meeting will be discussing prohibiting smoking in the parks. So if anybody out there is interested in speaking regarding the issue, please show up at our meeting. And it starts at 5 o'clock, and it's here at the Veterans Hall. Thank you.
Okay.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Last Monday, I'm sure you all saw in the paper that the 38-foot fishing vessel Josephine hit the South T Pier, excuse me, not the South T Pier, the South Jetty, about 4:30 in the morning. The vessel sunk on the jetty. There was a small release of fuel or engine oil. The incident was federalized. California Department of Fish and Game, Oil Spill Prevention Office, and Coast Guard were on scene early in the morning. By the way, two people were taken off with no injuries, and the owner and his father were fine. But the fuel spill and the sunken vessel was the issue we dealt with all week, and the vessel had to be raised. It was a pretty complicated effort. Once it was raised, we had to take the fuel and the contaminants off. Maybe a fair amount of people saw that it was taken out of the boat launch ramp with a lot of heavy equipment on Friday, finished about 8:30. Scene was cleaned, and this morning the vessel was demolished and taken off to the dump. So that's over with. Last Tuesday, we had a meeting with some City of Monterey personnel and some folks from Monterey Aquarium to compare notes on how our cities are trying to preserve marine-dependent uses and commercial fishing uses in partnership with conservation groups and our visitor-serving industries. And I think it was a good meeting. We were invited to follow it up with a meeting in Monterey, which we haven't scheduled yet, but that's something I see in the future. The dredge has been here 19 days. The Aquina will be leaving on Wednesday to go back to Newport, Oregon. And they're finished for this year.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Before we have public comment, we have a presentation. It's a continuation of something that we began last time. Stephen Lamb is going to show us a DVD this time and talk about homeless situations.
Well, first of all, I want to say that Thursday would appear is Morro Bay's birthday, so I want to say happy birthday to the city.
I didn't even know that.
Thank you for having me back. We do have the video tonight, and I'm happy to share it with you. This is a video that really puts pictures on figures, and the figures are from a 2005 homeless enumeration that was done countywide. We will be doing another enumeration in January, and that's required of all urban counties that receive HUD funding. And so that's going through the Board of Supervisors now for a grant request. So there will be a follow-up study, and I think that that will be real useful because it will give us a very recent picture of homeless issues in our town. And in So those images, I think, are very powerful, and I think they also put a very important reality to the term homelessness. One of the things that this was sort of the precursor of was this report, which is called The Path to Home. This is the final version that hopefully will be reviewed and supported by the Leadership Council, trying to implement the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness, and that group is convening this Thursday. The path after that will be that this report will go to every municipality in the county, and we'll have study sessions. And so we will be back to share more detail with you about the particulars of the issue and the vision that a lot of community members have as far as long-term solutions. So thank you very much. I wanted to introduce Greg Bouchot with West Coast Housing, who has a local Morro Bay housing response, a homeless housing response program that I think you should be aware of.
Mayor, council members, I'm a little moved by that video. It's the first time I've seen it. We see this every day with the 30-plus beds we have here in Morro Bay, and I want to thank the city of Morro Bay for their support with the Churro Creek Ranch location. We are working to create more beds. What we find is these individuals are functioning, productive, intelligent people that just can't survive in this high economic climate. And our goal is to provide more beds and more services for them so that they can find a safe place, give them back their dignity. From there, we see many of them move on to better situations. It's just a matter of getting them into a situation where they don't lose hope. So again, I want to thank you for your support. We are looking forward to engaging you in the future with some projects and ideas that we have. We also want to move across the county to create single occupancy rooms for these individuals that need a help out of this spiral that many are too close to. There's many families that are just a paycheck away from a shelter. And we want to, along with Stefan and the other organizations, look at the solution of housing first. Find a place for them to stay that's safe and warm before they end up on the streets. So again, I want to thank you for your support. West Coast Housing has been incorporated for a year now, and we are have been a part of the Churro Creek Ranch for 6 years, which, as you know, has a very lengthy history here in Morro Bay. Again, I want to thank you for your support, and you can look us up on the web at westcoasthousing.org or give us a call out at the Churro Creek location for any information that you would have or support. We are publicly funded, and we look forward to engaging the community in the future.
Could you tell us your phone number? You said we could call, a person could call. What's your phone number?
I'm going to just take the easiest way is my cell. I'm going to give my cell number, I don't always get messages. Area code's 805-574.
The comment, and please limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Mayor, council members, city staff. My name is Ani. I'm the membership director for the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, and I'm here to give you the stats from our visitor center and our website. For the month of June, we received 881 phone calls. A total of 2,098 visitors came into our office there. We had in referrals 1,891. 362 were for lodging. 285 were for dining. 540 were on recreation. 294 retail. 60 on real estate. And 350 on events. Now, many of you know we've been updating our website and enhancing it. For the month of June, we had 23,232 sessions. And for the first time, 1,129,706 hits for the month of June. That's 169,727 more than May. And then also, I would just like to add, in the last 8.5 months, we have brought in 110 new members.
Thank you very much. That's exciting news.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, people at home. On Saturday, we had the CAL FIRE presentation by Chief Matt Jenkins. It was really informative and easy to understand. Bill Murphy gave a presentation for the ad hoc committee and how they reached consensus to carry on. So I would tell anyone that can, AGP, we have to thank Nancy Castle and AGP because they filmed it, and you can see it on Channel 20. And it's really a great presentation. It makes it really easy to understand what CAL FIRE is all about. And I encourage everyone to look at this and make a decision, either positive or negative, and let you know at the next meeting what their feelings are, because you are the people that will have to make that decision ultimately. And I just want to thank everybody involved. It was really a great turnout. They had great questions, and I thought it was really good for our city. Thank you.
Thanks, Heath.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and members of the council. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here this evening representing the four property owners for the Palm Street abandonment. I'm here to talk about item A7. I need to object to the resolution for the Palm Avenue abandonment as written because it does not adequately address the liability and safety issues. I believe the council at the last hearing was concerned about placing the legal responsibility for any accidents on the property owners in conjunction with the pedestrian path. The resolution requires that the property owners construct and maintain the pedestrian path, but offers no relief of liability. My question is, if the property owners maintain the pathway, aren't they indeed exposed to potential legal actions? I'm respectfully requesting that the council clarify this issue and add any necessary to create one additional parking space in this area should be more than ample for this project. Ultimately, the whole community will benefit from this. Thank you very much, and I'm available for questions if you need any.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council members. My name is Joan Solu, and I'm speaking to you as a private resident this evening. I've come before you to speak to you about an announcement for the Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation. Anyhow, here comes Nancy, so I'll talk while she comes because I know she'll fix it. The Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation is a grassroots organization made up of committed individuals interested in building a community, competition-sized, and therapy pools in Morro Bay to be located at the high school. For those in the public that might be interested in the mission of the Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation or finding out more information, please come to the kickoff informational meeting on Wednesday, July 30th at 6 p.m. at Morro Bay High School in room 602. Let me repeat that. That's Wednesday, July 30th at 6 p.m., Morro Bay High School, room 602. You can also go to www.morrobaypool.org for more information for about the meeting. We will also be including a presentation by the Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation as a discussion item at the Recreation and Parks Commission meeting on Thursday, August 7th at 5 p.m. here in the Veterans Hall. So if you'd like to, you can attend one or both of those meetings or visit the website, but I'd like to see some support for this. I think that our community is in dire needs. We do have a fantastic ocean, difficult to learn how to swim out there, but fun once you get to learn how to swim. So please attend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Peters and council members. Linda Merrill, Morro Bay. I would like to tell you all I am so pleased that Andrea Luker has been appointed as our city manager. Andrea is one of the most positive people I've ever known, and I know that our city will be a better place in which to live with Andrea as our manager, so I'm really looking forward to the next few years or years that Andrea will be our manager. Also, Bill Boucher, I'd like to say that I want him to enjoy his retirement. I'm sure he will, and I know the city is really going to miss his services, so I'd like to mention that. Also, there's a woman I'd like to mention. Her name is Margaret Maring. She doesn't live in Morro Bay, but all of us have felt her political help in electing wonderful, wonderful supervisors. Representative Lois Capps, she helped on her campaign, Jack O'Connell. We just have
the city of Morro Bay doesn't know yet. We have an official flower in this city, and it's the dahlia, which is just, most of them are just starting to bloom right now. And I was glad to hear Councilman Winholtz's comment about the picnic up at the community garden, because they've grown some gorgeous dahlias up there. And we're hoping that people who grow their dahlias up there and everybody else in this town will bring dahlia stems so we can have a big table of all the different kinds of dahlias on Saturday, August 23rd, from 1 to 4. And believe me, they come in an unlimited number of sizes and colors. The other thing, couple of just highlights, we have Dr. Joe Sable from San Luis Obispo, who grows dahlias that are this big, and he'll be here talking about dahlias. We have a woman named Donna Dysart, who's an Ikebana teacher, who will be doing demonstrations, among other things, about how to decorate with dahlias and do floral arrangements. We also this year are adding what we call Art in Bloom, and we will have some artists with their work on display and flower arrangements using dahlias to accompany these. Now, this is all free, plus we give you refreshments, and once again, it's Saturday, August 23rd, from 1 to 4 at St. Timothy's. Oh, and there's one more thing. The Morro Bay Planning Commission has issued a challenge to the city council. They all have little dahlias that they're growing, and you guys have dahlias. Well, some of you. Somebody's didn't sprout, but I've been getting reports on other people's dahlias and how big they're growing. So we're going to have a special contest that day, and I'd like all the city council members to bring their dahlias, and we'll have a display. And we'll have a display of the dahlias that the planning commissioners are growing. And then we'll have a contest so people can vote on which group has the very best skill in growing dahlias. Now, you're allowed to use worm tea or your mother or whatever other tricks you need to get your dahlias to grow. Now, one of your August group up there had a little problem with his tuber that I gave him. It didn't sprout. So this evening, I have a new little dahlia plant for Councilman Grantham so that he has a second chance here.
I was given a defective dahlia.
Madam Mayor, if I could just quickly interject. I don't know how I'm going to get my dahlia there. I transplanted it already. So it's about yay high.
You can bring just stems. That's fine.
Okay.
Or a video. Thank you, Nancy.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council, staff. My name is Anita Ayub from Morro Bay Pups. I know we're not on the agenda today. Sorry to hear that we've been pushed back to August the 11th, but that's okay. We'll be back. What I'm here to do is not only to my house, but I think to other people in the neighborhood. And I just want to thank them. I had to have my carpets cleaned. I called their parents, and I sent them the bill. So thank you, police officers. Henry Cantoon was one of them that were there. The other two, I did not get their names. But thank you.
Thank you.
Nancy Castle with a Chess Live update.
notice a headband. It's the crown for tonight. I've realized that I need a little practice at putting on these chess games, so we're going to have Sunday afternoon chess on the giant chess board at 3:30 p.m. on the second and fourth Sundays of the month. And this follows B'nai Sarah belly dancing that Patty Harsh puts on. So it's a full day of events on the chessboard on the second and fourth Sundays of the month. So I invite everybody to come out and be a chess piece on the board. We could make you castles. Well, that's always a good thing. Or queens, knights, or, you know, more typically a pawn. So I look forward to it, and thank you. And the fire department, taking off my scarf now and showing my AGP logo, the fire department video will be, CAL FIRE video will be presented for the next couple of weeks after the city council meetings or after the planning commission meetings. We'll play it a lot so everybody will have a chance to see it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. My name is John Barta. I feel compelled to respond tonight to comments made at your last meeting. Your comments violated your own policy of no personal attacks when you named me by name and then proceeded to make certain statements about myself, my motives, and my actions. This public comment period is my only chance to respond. First, I would like to respond to the idea expressed by some on the council that the voters didn't know what they were voting for in the primary election 2 years ago. Here's what the petition said in very bold print on both sides. An initiative measure amending the municipal code to change the time and method of electing city officials to allow for a primary election with the most successful of those candidates advancing to a November runoff election or being elected by an outright majority vote in the primary election. Those words were in bold print on both sides of the petition. They were written by the city attorney, and certainly everybody that signed those petitions knew exactly what they were signing, and the voters knew exactly what they were voting for, since that was the exact language in the voter pamphlet. The voters empowered themselves, and our primary election had a total of 12 candidates. I believe this is the highest number of candidates we've ever had running for office. And in the runoffs this fall, we will elect candidates by a majority vote, and that will be another good thing for the city. So I think the voters did the right thing, and I'm confident that our primary elections are here to stay. I feel very good about that, and I'm very proud of that. Thank you very much. If you wonder what motivates me, please watch that video presentation on homelessness that you just saw.
Back. And we'll start with item B1. Item B1 and item B2 are both going to be continued to our next meeting. However, they are public hearings, and so we will open them up for comment if anyone wishes to offer comment. Rob, did you want to?
Just that you meant they'd be continued, and we need to continue them to a date certain. But that date certain might be different based on what you do with the last item, B9. So
we'll have it by the end of the night.
You're right.
Okay. All right. So where's my agenda here so I can at least read it? Okay. So item B1 is an extension of, consideration of a CDBG Planning and Technical Assistance Economic Development Grant application for a redevelopment feasibility study and adoption of a resolution approving the application and grant agreement. Does anyone wish to speak on B1? We will open the public hearing now. Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on B1, and this will be continued to a date certain later in our meeting. Item B2, consideration of a CDBG Planning and Technical Assistance General Allocation Grant application for a redevelopment feasibility study and adoption of a resolution approving the application and grant agreement. We'll open the public hearing. Does anyone wish to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing, and we will continue that to a date certain later in the meeting. All right, and with that, item B3.
extension of an interim urgency ordinance of the City Council establishing a temporary moratorium on the acceptance, processing, and approval of applications and permits to construct, modify, or place wireless communications facilities pending completions of studies and the preparation of an update to the city's zoning ordinance code. Wow, is your report going to be as long as the title?
No, I don't think so. Government Code Section 65858 authorizes the city to adopt an urgency measure or a urgency ordinance by four-fifths vote. In this situation, it deals with our zoning ordinance dealing with wireless communication facilities. We denied a wireless facilities in our residential area, and have subsequent to that have been sued and had to reach a settlement agreement because of the law was not in our favor in that case. In order to make certain that doesn't happen again in our residential districts, staff has proposed that we put a moratorium in effect. This will require really no staff time because, in fact, we had already corrected this deficiency with our wireless facilities in our residential district when we adopted our updated zoning ordinance. The problem is although you've approved that zoning ordinance, it's waiting for approval by the Coastal Commission. So this moratorium will be in effect for 1 year. Hopefully we'll have our updated zoning code back from Coastal Commission by then. If we don't, we could adopt it for another year. And if we don't have it by the end of 2 years, we're really in trouble, I guess, is the way to put it. But hopefully we'll have it by then, and then they don't allow.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, 5-0.
That was by title and number only, so she'll have to read the title and number.
Okay. This is ordinance number 542, the extension of an interim urgency ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay establishing a temporary moratorium on the acceptance, processing, and approval of applications and permits to construct, modify, or place wireless communications facilities pending completion of studies and the preparation of an update to the City Zoning Ordinance Code.
All right. So that
can see why Rob let Andrea read it.
That concludes our public hearings. And next, we're going to go to our new business, and I've taken things a little bit out of order on the agenda so that we can respond to the people that are here for the presentations. So we're going to start with item D3, which is consideration of funding for the Economic Vitality Corporation for a countywide tourism industry study and a community-specific study. And Andrea, were you going to give us a report or just turn it over to Mr. Manchuk?
Actually, I will introduce Michael Manchuk is here. He's the president and CEO of the Economic Vitality Corporation. He's included a couple of things in your staff report this evening, and he's here to talk a little bit about those.
Okay.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. I'm here to make a very brief presentation about the Economic Vitality Corporation. Just a bit of background for those that aren't aware of us, and then talk about some of the projects, one of which is a study for the tourism industry, specifically for the city of Morro Bay, as well as for the county of San Luis Obispo. And hopefully this PowerPoint will work. Mm-hmm. Run that for me. Thank you. A few bullet points about the EVC. And I want to thank, before I start this, I want to thank Rick Grantham for the effort he has into the EVC as a board of directors. 14th year is a nonprofit organization. We're a countywide organization that provides business resources to people that want to start a business or expand a business. Our focus is on helping to create jobs and also getting people to invest in the community. One of the things that we offer amongst a variety of resources is commissioning studies that look at industry sectors throughout the county. And since the tourism industry is so important to Morro Bay, it's a study that we've launched several months ago, and I'll talk more a bit about that in a moment. Next slide, please. Just very briefly about the EVC, we subscribe to a practice of economic development, which is called economic gardening. And economic gardening really means that you focus on the expansion and the startup of businesses. and you spend less of your time and resources on attracting businesses. Attracting businesses to this county is a difficult task because of the high cost of doing business and the jobs, housing, and balance. So we'd really try to focus on people, but providing resources, whether it be guaranteeing a business loan that we do or a variety of other things, to help people start really their dream. And an interesting point that the Census Bureau says that there's the largest percentage of sole proprietors that are vital to the EBC and to the business communities throughout the county. They provide counseling to businesses, help business plan development, et cetera. Next slide. Our website, in the middle of that website is a photo of Carolyn Duell. Elemental Herbs is a company in Morbay that we've helped. She's got off to a great start selling product all over the country. And we're really pleased that she's able to do that. Our newsletter that you can download or we can mail to you, as we do that about once a quarter. And we have 50,000 of those that are sent throughout the county. Kind of near the tail end here, some of the seminars and events that we do, this was an important one for which we had Morbay participation. It was the first of its kind. It was an emergency preparedness event that helped businesses prepare for emergencies. It also included helping government organizations as well. But the fact remains that something like 80% of businesses that are out there have no emergency plan whatsoever. And we felt that if we would do this course, which we did, this seminar, we had about 220 attendees, and it really helped people prepare and realize that it's not that difficult to do. But for those that have a plan, the stats show that if you can get up and running much faster if you have such a plan. In fact, some percentage of businesses never go back into business after a major disaster, whether it's an internal fire or a regional disaster of some kind. Next slide. And this is an event called our Venture Capital Seminar. We do this once a year. Interesting segue this evening because one of the presentations was on homelessness, and one of the companies that was presenting here or spoke here actually was featured at this event as a way to provide homelessness housing. So that was a real success, and companies are actually finding investors through this event. It's the only one of its kind. We do it once a year, and we're starting to roll out smaller versions of this throughout the year. Next slide. So just results since inception of the EBC. When we provide loan guarantees, we count very carefully the number of jobs that are created through that help. We do not count the number of jobs created through other EBC resources, so I want to clarify that. But we have created or saved up to 450 jobs. We have leveraged about $6 million in business loans, assisted several thousand entrepreneurs, and helped several hundred start or expand their business. And last year alone, just in the fiscal year, we leveraged the county's contribution to the EBC to the tune of $3.7 million. And just on some local challenges, for those that don't make it to the economic forecast that's done every November, throughout the county of San Luis Obispo, we have some fundamental challenges. The economy throughout the county a year ago grew by about less than 1%, and that's the worst in about 10 years. So that's concerning, but the economist that does that study, that talk, he said the number one thing you need to do is start creating more private sector businesses. Nationally, it's known that private businesses, small businesses, create the most amount of jobs in this country, and I think this area should be no different. So we want to encourage that, but they need resources, and they come to us for resources. The other is, of course, the jobs, housing, and balance. The thin job market. Often I talk to folks who are looking to move to the area, move a business here, and often the comment I hear is, if that job doesn't work out, what else do I do? From more diversity in its businesses. So in other words, more businesses and more types of businesses. But since tourism is a major component of the county's economy as a whole, if not the largest economy, one of, but also the city of Morbay, we started several months ago a countywide study, and it is near the end of that research. We've hired one of the best firms in the industry to do this study. We've requested a contribution of $2,100 from the city of Morbay to help on this study. Every community in the county has done this, and we're hoping that Morbay will do the same. It will be all telling for a lot of reasons about data that will be collected, recommendations about how do you create more vitality in that tourism sector. The other part of the tourism study project that we have is each community has the opportunity of commissioning their own study through this consulting firm. And to do so, it will cost up to $12,000. But it will take a very careful look at the tourism economy. It will take a look at all the strengths, the weaknesses, and then ultimately the recommendations that each city or each community needs to take or should consider taking to create more health in their local economy. It will also include a tourism marketing plan. We've spoken to the Chamber of Commerce. There are a lot of folks in the community, and they're very, very supportive of this. And while every community has supported the countywide study, not every community, I should make that clear, it has commissioned a community-specific study. About half of them have. So I want to, if you want a last slide, I think that's the end. It is. That's my contact information. But I want to encourage the council to consider helping to reach out to the business community so that the business community can take credit and get recognition for helping to foster and support this study. It will take money, but this is good value. We're getting this study at a fraction of the price that it would normally cost, and I think the time is very important. It will address, as an example, certain things in the study, like the airport. And as we all know in reading the papers recently, that there's been a reduction of air service, and that's very concerning. But it's very, very concerning to communities and people that make their living or have a job in the tourism industry. So we're taking a very careful look at this, and we think the time is right to do this. So with that, I'll stop, but I'll take any questions anyone has. And otherwise, I want to thank you very much for having me.
I'm going to ask one question simply because we did chat about this. So what you're looking for from the city is $2,100. And then the $12,000, you were actually looking for support from the business community as well. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that if the business community, especially those in the tourism sector, realize that this study is available at a fraction of its price, that's going to be very, very helpful to them and the community as a whole.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Manchuk?
No. Didn't you already start a group to have discussions with the airport regarding service? I think I read something about that in the last day or two.
We have spearheaded the formation of what otherwise never existed, which is a advisory body of similar sizes as San Luis Obispo County that are actually getting new service. But there are certain things you need to do. You need to be very strategic. You need to market yourselves heavily. And you need to get the attention of the airline, which is very difficult in this environment. But it happens. So that's one of the things that this group will look at.
And when do you anticipate the tourism study being completed?
The countywide study should be completed by September. At that point, we will roll out community-wide meetings throughout the county to talk about the results of that study and the recommendations that the study will make. City or community-specific studies, they are now beginning in that research. So it's important if this is going to be done for the city of Morro Bay that we start as soon as we can.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. We'll
thank you very much.
Thanks for being here. All right, comments? I'll make one. I did talk to some people on our promotions committee, and I asked them if they had discussed this, which they had. And apparently at the time they discussed it, there was a figure of $8,000, and it was for the community-wide. They were not familiar with the $2,100 figure, so I guess that's a buy-in to the $2,100. So I guess that's a buy-in to the general county one. So just putting that out there. They declined on the basis of an $8,000 commitment, and I asked if they have any money in their budget for something like this, and they do not. So whatever we would do would come from the general fund.
I have a question. It was brought to my attention that there was a city-sponsored tourism study in 2000. Do any of you, Janice or Bill or Betty, recall anything, or Bruce?
Yeah, Madam Mayor and Council, what we did earlier before was when we had Alan Coton do like a marketing study, one of the things that he identified is that we have weaknesses in our marketing apparatus. And we put out a request for proposals
to see if we can get a consultant come in here and give us a strategic plan for shoring up our marketing apparatus in the community. And ultimately, we had four or five good proposals, but ultimately, at that time, the council decided not to go forward with it.
And I would respond to that. In addition to what Mr. Ambo said, prior to that, there was a conversion study that the promotions committee did in the early 2000s that talked about who comes here, what they're looking for, and that kind of thing. I don't think they address it anymore. I know they did for a few years. I think Meredith Bates was the pusher of that in the early days. And since she's left the committee, I don't think they've done that. So I'll just make my comment, if you're looking for comments, is I think, in light of what Mr. Ambo said, which is true, I think we know where our weaknesses are, and I think the council, I remember voting for that, actually, that we needed to get someone from the outside to come in and do a marketing plan for us. But I feel like we know what our weaknesses are, so I don't feel like we need to do the $12,000 to tell us what to do. I don't think we have the $12,000, that we have other ways we could spend that instead. I think we know what we need to do when we're ready to do it, and maybe that's something we can address on August 13th. As far as the $2,000 for the county participation, I have mixed feelings because they're going to go ahead and do it anyways, and they'll be talking about us, whether or not we contribute.
That's it. Having said that, and Betty used the term honorable, and I like that term, being honorable and paying our share and being part of a countywide study. I think that's probably more appropriate for us at this time than the other figure. If the other figure can, you know what I'd like to do? In a perfect world, I'd like to take $3,000 from VCB and hand it over to this organization, but I don't think, I think we've already paid them the $32,000, haven't we? Well, that's what I'd like to see. And I don't know how much they're going to penalize us for taking a few bucks from them. You know, they have this big thing, well, if you don't participate fully, then you're not going to get anything. Well, you know, and that's always been a thing in my craw that I don't really care for. So what I'd like to do is pull that amount out, the $2,100 from them, and give it to EVC for that portion.
Yeah.
That's a whole other concept. I'm not sure.
It is, yeah.
I think whether we do it that way or something else, I think I could probably very easily do the honorable thing and put the $2,100 up and then figure out where we're going to get it. $2,100, I think we could probably afford. At this moment in time, I'm not totally sold on the $12,000.
Melody?
We don't have $12,000 for the community specific, and I'm glad to hear that people are recognizing that. We have a promotions committee. We have a John Sorgen Fry consulting to us on that committee. We have a great chamber that's coming up with all kinds of events. I also kind of am sick of studies, consultants who come up with recommendations, and then I want things to start happening, and they are as a result of our very active chamber. Now, as to the 2100 and this notion of honor, I heard Mr. Manchek say that we were nearing the end of this study. It's going to be complete by September. And I feel that the best thing to do is to ask people for the money before you start the study, not near the end of the process. So given the fact that I can't give any money to aid for agencies and I cut some money from promotions, you know, I mean, I just don't, and you can't take money back from the EVC because that was a resolution or motion or whatever. But I'm opposed to both of these fundings.
Okay, well, our promotion committee, granted, they weren't talking about 2100, they were talking about 8,000, but they decided not to participate because they also felt that we could get this information or had this information already, or could get it from our chamber. I mean, the figures that Ani gave us just tonight,
about, you know, where people are calling from, where they're sending fulfillment to, all of that, we can pretty much, we know where our tourists come from. We pretty much know where they're spending money and how they're spending money. So while I certainly support, we're going to give some back, hopefully, to our own promotions committee at mid-year if we can manage that. And I think that those have to be our priorities. So I would be opposed to it as well.
Are you speaking to the 12,000 or the 2,100 or both?
Either one.
Either
yeah,
one?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm, again, it's not that I don't appreciate what you're doing and think it's a good thing. I just think that at this point, it's not a good thing for us.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
If I could ask Mr. Manchik, if you can come to the... I guess my question is, you've heard us say, well, we have a pretty good idea what the outcome of a study would be. What can you tell us that this study, what could this study tell us that we don't know?
That's a very good question. Not being an expert in the tourism industry, what the EVC did, it took a long time to get input from industry stakeholders, so people in the tourism industry, both in Morro Bay and throughout the county. And so a committee was created of real experts in the tourism industry. We then went out to the tourism industry as a whole and from elsewhere in the state and the nation, and we got proposals, pre-proposals. We then whittled those down to two, and then we selected the one. But these are the people that looked at these studies, and most importantly, though, looked at what the scope of work was. So in other words, the idea was not to spend time or money getting people from the outside. And I completely appreciate your comment, Mr. Merritt, regarding, you know, consultants coming into town and telling you what they need to do and then leave and say good luck. We really looked very, very hard at finding the most brilliant minds possible in the tourism industry to say, what do we need to do here? What we told them is we don't want just information we already know. We don't want you to drop off a study, leave it at our doorstep, and say good luck. We actually want you to participate in this process. And what we're seeing in a draft so far is that this company is coming up with some pretty amazing information, not only data, which, again, you can find that sometimes at some other places, but it's really about the recommendations. It's a firm that specializes in tourism. It's not looking to just tell you what you already know. Ultimately, it's about creating more value in the community. It's about increasing the amount of business in the tourism sector. And then ultimately, everyone benefits from this. I completely understand, however, that, you know, the city's finances are in a place where it's very difficult. But really, I came here not to ask the city for its contribution of $8,000 to $12,000, $12,000 being the higher, which included is a marketing plan itself. But it was really to encourage the business community to come up to the plate. Those individuals who have a stake in the tourism industry directly and say, you know what, this study, if you had it done in any other fashion, it would cost much, much more. But because we've got the entire project as a whole, the firm has offered a huge discount for each one of these community-specific studies. So I just want to make clear that that's kind of what we're talking about here. And we're not coming to the city to say, you know, would you give us $12,000 for the study? And for which the EVC makes no percentage of whatsoever. We're doing this because we think it's the right thing to do at the right time, the right place. And clearly, tourism has its weaknesses.
Morning. Have you been to that meeting?
I have, yes. I think I've been there three times, actually.
Oh, three times. Yeah. Have you ever thrown this out to those people to say, would you like to participate in something like this?
I have, actually. Okay. And I think it was well received. But, you know, liking something and paying for something are, as we all know, are two different things. But I have. I don't think there's anyone who's against the idea. The question is just, you know, it's a lot of money, but will $12,000 be a good investment? I guess that's really long, long term, and that's kind of how we look at it. And I think if the business community was to step up to the plate and say, you know, let's just take this in little chunks and work with us to commission this study, I think it would be very important. I also think it's important that there not be a void in the scheme of things in terms of the entire project. Because if you have each of the communities being looked at and several community-specific studies being done, but if Morro Bay, which I believe is one of the crown jewels in the tourism industry, if there isn't specific data coming from Morro Bay, that's not helpful to the city of Morro Bay and to the tourism industry as a whole in the county. So I hope that clarifies.
Well, flattery certainly helps, but saying with Jewel, I think that what you've touched on is an important point, that we need to get the word out, and hopefully business people who are watching this or sitting in the audience will realize that this is something you can participate in and be a part of, and it just needs some funding. And if it's spread out over a whole bunch of businesses, then it can be just a few $100 each. So, I mean, I think we've got Peter out there still, and certainly the chamber can let people know that this opportunity is available, and I know you're doing that as well. Yeah. So I don't know if we need a motion on this.
Well, I might propose to Mr. Grantham, Mr. Pierce, then, would you want to, I would make the motion that the three of us donate $300 or $400 apiece from our contingency fund, and that we challenge either the promotions committee or the chamber to come up with the other $1,000 to fund the $2,100.
Okay, was that a motion?
That was a motion.
Okay.
And I'll second.
I'll second that.
All right.
I'm sorry for interrupting. Instead of three or 400, if we get the exact amount.
You want the exact amount?
Yeah.
So if we take on the 1,100, it would be 350 apiece?
Yeah, that means.
Well, I don't think I don't think they want to.
My contingency is empty right now.
Okay.
I gave the remainder of the money to the Kite Festival.
Okay.
But you would have your new allocation for the 08-09 year. Mm hmm. Which is $1,000 apiece.
Okay, so that's a motion and a second. Discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Okay. All right, so you've got some funding and. Great.
Thank you very much.
Get a little more.
Thank you, Mike.
Sorry, Demerit and Peters opposed that motion. I should say that out loud. Okay. All right, and the next item we're going to take, again, not in a particular order here, is item D4, and this is our space needs study on the Corporation Yard.
Just one quick question, since you threw my name into your lead there. Can you tell me where the shovel has hit the dirt in this town? We're doing some lift station replacements, and because all that stuff you just mentioned is planning, but we're actually doing some stuff, aren't we?
Correct. Active construction projects. I would include the Harbor Walk still as active. There's a little bit of cleanup to do there. The fire station project, the roundabout project. And
but as to water and collections.
And water, we've ordered the parts and are working on the design for the expansion of the desalinization.
Okay.
We're doing the permitting on that. Lift station 2, the 50% design submittal is under review.
Mm-hmm.
And the permitting and environmental review for that project have been completed. Lift station 3 is probably about 30% design. Let me think what else. There's a couple others out there.
That's good, Dylan. You go ahead. I just wanted to clarify what's proposed and being studied in EIR and where the metals hit the road.
Fair enough. All right, I think we're ready to go now. I brought a presentation, have a staff report. What I thought I'd do is run through the presentation and then kind of take questions. There's a lot here, and so I apologize. There is a lot of material here. There's a lot to get through. There's a lot of moving pieces, which is actually why we commissioned the study. It was, we don't want to mess this up and have one decision be a domino somewhere else without really realizing what we're doing. So we commissioned RM to go ahead and do a study. What we did was we commissioned them to assess our existing facilities. They went through, interviewed city staff in all of the divisions that work in the corporate yard to determine what their current operation is, and then also to look at what their anticipated future operation or operational changes might be. So we kind of looked at what everybody's doing. In that process, you're looking for key relationships. So, for example, the mechanics have to service and inspect the dial-a-ride vehicles and the trolleys every day before they go out. And so you go, you don't want to put the trolleys on one site and the mechanics on another and then have to have them chase across town. So they went through and interviewed everybody. Rolled that information up into individual facilities and said, okay, this is what the building for the mechanics might need to look like. Here's what the space for the collection system workers might need to look like. And then they took those blocks and rolled those blocks up and started kind of playing and pushed the blocks around on the site and said, how are we going to make this all fit? Can we make this all fit? And how could we make it work better than it is right now? Next slide, please. So some of the driving reasons behind this study. I love this picture. It looks like we have beautiful skylights. Those are not skylights. Those are big rusted pieces of metal that are waiting to blow off and hurt somebody. That's the collection system shed. So that's the workspace for the collection system workers in the city of Morro Bay. Actually bothers me a lot. I mean, it really bugs me to have our guys work there. But we need to rehab that facility. We need to do something about that. It's an unsafe working condition, and it's just not acceptable. Also, we have the desal facility needs some additions to it to make it operate the way it's intended to and to provide us with reliable functioning into the future. We also are looking at the wastewater treatment plant expansion, which is coming. It's a few years out still. RM said, hey, look at this. Just tell us, where should we put all this stuff? How do we make this fit? How do we make this work? So they came back, next slide, please, and gave us four options. And their first option that they looked at, they said, well, you could kind of push things around, and if you left the concrete plant alone, you could grow into the trailer park and get some more space. But we're not going to fit on the site that we currently have. So there's some pros and cons to this option. And going through here, you go, one of the big cons about this is that you're actually impacting the trailer park. And we didn't know that that would be a great thing to do. Also, what happens in a city is you wind up with these remnant parcels that you wind up owning. We get a lot of the weird stuff that nobody really wants. It's not a great spot. So the shape of our parcel is very odd. So this is still a very fairly inefficient layout. There's not good adjacencies. You kind of park in one spot, walk across the yard. You guys spend a lot of time kind of chasing around the yard. Let's go to the next slide. The second option was to expand into the concrete plant. And so we looked at that and said we could grow into the concrete plant. Depending on how we do that, that's both option two and three. Option two leaves us with a weird parcel that you don't really have very good access to. Next slide. Option three, we did the same thing, grew into the concrete plant with the new facilities that we need, left an access easement there, and then also left a parcel that you could access via that access easement. Next slide. Option four, we had them look at just sort of if you started with a blank slate and wanted to start over, money was no object, how would you do this? So they said, well, if we took a new piece of property, we would shape it like this, we would configure the buildings like so, and even in that configuration, we would need more square footage than what we currently have down there. So we don't have enough room in the current yard to fit all of the functions that are occurring down there now and into the future. And then next slide. So what we were recommending is as we went through this process, we thought it was important to sort of approach the concrete plant since that seemed like that would be the most logical option was to, in one shape or another, grow into their facility. And this is a little bit rough, this diagram. But what we did is in our discussions with the concrete plant, we had them do a layout. And this is their revised layout, and they sort of have the access easement and then about half of their current parcel. Under the right conditions...
Excuse me, could sure. you use a laser and show us what we're looking at there?
Yeah, let me grab a pointer. Hold on for a second.
To confirm, this is not in the book we got. This is a response from the concrete plant?
Correct. This was generated by them.
Okay.
So just a quick layout. Here would be an access easement. They would also access off of Park Street. They would come in. They would have a reclamator facility. Their batching plant would be down in here. This is what they call the Grizzly, which is their material storage area. So they would have a pull in on Park Street, unload materials, and pull out an access easement. And then when they were batching, they would pull the trucks down in here, batch, and then either drive out Park Street or out the access easement. So Sure. What we gain from that, currently the property line, and I'm sorry the diagrams don't match exactly, but that's what happens when you have more than one party doing this. Right now, the power plant or the concrete plant is leasing all of this area.
And then, so if we go with their idea there, what we lose are those outdoor storage areas, those green outdoor storage areas.
Correct. We would have to, let's go back two slides if you can. That was Ford. In option three, we left a portion of the concrete plant intact. We would lose more of that. And so what would happen is, yeah, you would lose that green area, and then the oxidation might have to shove over a little bit also. So you might lose a little bit of drying bed.
So, because we'd have to move the oxidation ditch over to where the sludge beds are.
I'm not sure that you'd have to go all the way there, but you would probably lose some length on those sludge beds. So let's go then forward. Let's go one more. So what I did, because there is a lot of moving parts here.
Do you have a copy of this?
No, I just did as an overhead. But okay. There are a lot of moving parts, and so I kind of went through the options. And option one, growing into the trailer park, some of the pros of that is it leaves the concrete plant intact. It really, though, would require a major planning project in that the trailer park is zoned visitor-serving commercial. Our yard is in industrial use, and so I don't it would be problemsome to try to do that. It would be a difficult project to try to push through if you could even get there. Fiscal impact would be negative. You'd be impacting the operation of the trailer park, some of their dry trailer storage. I'm not sure exactly the extent of that. I didn't approach them and ask them to estimate, you know, what their losses would be, but they would be losing about a fifth of their trailer storage. Go ahead, Rick.
Bruce isn't here, so I'll ask you, which is the more odorous of the two? I'm looking at it in conjunction with the trailer park. The sludge bed or the oxidation ditches, or are they equally unpleasant?
Certainly. No, actually, I wouldn't go so far as to say any of the odors are pleasant. The oxidation ditch has what's called a more earthy smell. A lot of people find that a lot more pleasant. It's the drying activity and the turning over the material that's decomposing in the drying beds that usually causes the most odors. So from staff perspective, we didn't think that the first option really would be the best. You could consider it, but there's some big hurdles there.
On option four, when you talk about requiring acquisition of new land, how much new land are you talking about?
It's a couple acres that you would need to get. It's just over, if we go back, thank you, Rob. I think there's 2 acres is approximately the parcel size.
Okay, thanks.
But Mr. Wade, on option number one, if you use the back part of the concrete company or let them move down there and gain their top half, you don't have to go into the RV park, and you still have everything on the page on option one. No, on one. If you look at option one, you've got your concrete plant still there. You just move some stuff over to the right. Or you take the concrete plant's configuration, let them come south, and you take over their top north plant, and you've still got everything on the page.
Correct. You can. Looking at option one, what you lose if you do that, you could be an option that would be out there.
Does Rob have a copy of this? Do you have a copy of this, by any chance? I'm looking on option one, and I'm just wondering on... If we're going to encroach into that trailer lot, is that going to necessitate going back to the drawing board with the Clausens and lowering our revenue from what we collect from?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it would lower the revenue, but it at least would take renegotiations of some sort.
So where we were at, let's go ahead and flip all the way to the end. As we went through the different options, going option two didn't seem to be the best way to go. It had a lot more negatives. Option three is what we were recommending, is that we encroach some portion into the concrete plant. That could either be the front or the back, that we would work that out with them, leave the trailer park alone. We may have to sacrifice some outdoor storage in the yard to make that work. But we thought that would have the least negative fiscal impact, and then it would also appear to be the most workable solution.
Mr. Betty. Wade, this little corner, southeast corner that belongs to the power plant, it looks like there's nothing on it. Is there any lease negotiation with them?
It's currently leased by the concrete plant, and they use that in their operation.
Oh, they do?
Yes.
Okay. And it, but when they, so when they push themselves back in their plan, they would be using that.
Correct.
Which would allow us to go up to the front.
Correct.
Okay, well, we're on that one. I've got a question, too. It says new property formed in site reworked. That looks like it extends into the trailer park.
The lines aren't perfect. Working off the aerials, it wouldn't intend
okay,
to.
So,
so we wouldn't do that.
Okay, thank you.
So there's nothing in this, and no intention, of course, to have a fiscal impact or how do we pay to provide a new collections worker workspace, because we should, and we should repave the lot.
Correct. Once we saw this sort of as the first step. There's a long road to hoe here. The land that we're talking about is jointly owned by Morro Bay Cayucas, so we're going to have to take at some point a recommendation to them that this is what we want to do, how amenable are you to it? It's 60-40 ownership on the whole area of the concrete plant. In citing the Ox Ditch, that's another facility that they're going to have to weigh in on. So what our proposal was tonight is for us to sort of pick an approach that we thought would be the best, and then we'll have to start the process of, one, dealing with Cayucas, two, dealing with the concrete plant, and then three, and probably the most interesting discussions of all, is in any of these options as you move forward, the collections building could move very quickly. Or if we decide that we're going to do something different, then we may just rehab that facility. But we're going to have to talk about who goes where, who pays for this, what divisions are impacted, and how they deal with those impacts to their operations. So I wouldn't think that we're deciding all of those things tonight. I think we're just sort of picking a general direction that this is where we think we ought to head right now, and then we'll come back with specific projects in the future.
Question. Dylan, you said let me back up. In your staff report, there's no recommendation as far as options, but did I hear you say that you recommended option three?
That's correct.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Mm-mm.
All right.
From the meetings, and you look at the two figures on page, no page number. They look like this. They're the inside rooms. Mm-hmm. They're before the maps. They're about three pages before the maps. And this came up when we were doing the fire station as well, that I would like to see the conference room and the break room become one room. I don't think that that building needs to be that large. And I know there's pros and cons of that, but that's always been my opinion, that you can have a meeting in the same room where you have lunch. Certainly they do that in City Hall. Mm-hmm. And the second page is the restrooms facilities, and I did note in those comments made by people there as well that they could get by with one less shower and only so many bathroom toilets. So I think that could be reduced as well. So I'd like to see that shrunk just a little bit. I'm excited for people that work down there that they can get a new facility. I think it's really needed. I would also suggest that maybe some more discussion of this would happen maybe on August 13th as we talk about consolidation of work. It's been thrown about. I think it was in the management partners study about whether we wanted to have Parks and Rec and Streets and others go together and share, if not personnel, maybe at least equipment. There's one of the departments here that has like six trucks, but it only has two people. So I think there's a lot of room to work things around.
Okay. Bill?
I have a question before my comment. If we do not affect the trailer storage, but we do move into the concrete plant, what theoretically would we be losing in revenue?
I can't speak to that. It would be subject to negotiation. We get two forms of revenue from the concrete plant right now. And Susan, shout out if I did get this wrong. But we get sales tax revenue and we get lease revenue. Sales tax revenue, we keep all of that. And then the lease revenue, we split that with Cayucas at 60-40. They're roughly comparable in value.
Madam Mayor, the other thing I'd like to add is when we met with them, they did indicate that this kind of nudge, it might efficiency up their operations, and they may take this, look at it as an opportunity to retrofit their operations mm-hmm. for more, more efficient, up-to-date processes. Mm-hmm. So we think if they do this, they may take the opportunity to fix some of their things. And
can we assume, though, that the lease revenue will go down from them if we invade the property they're on now?
I think that's a fair assumption. If I was leasing from you, I would argue that point.
So would I. So I guess the other question is, where would we lose more revenue? I know that the storage at that RV park is, I think, a significant item for them.
We get a lot more revenue out of the RV park. It's an order of magnitude bigger kind of thing. So that's why I sort of shied away from the going into the trailer park. And then not only that, but just the logistics of the zoning would be a big problem there also.
Okay. So that pretty much a lot.
It's not an either or. It's not an
I don't think we need to mess with those two entities either. Looking at the map here on option three, I don't think anybody lives in these trailers that are going to be up next to the sludge beds and oxidation ditches. I think that's just storage, and the ones that live in it are down here closer to the water. So my preference also is option three out of these.
Melody?
I'm fine with option three, but I also am interested in further talk with the concrete plant as to, like, their idea. I thought their idea had a lot of merit to it, and I think that those outdoor storage things can be kind of moved around in different places. They don't have to all be in one place. I was very interested at these pictures and some of the facts found in here. Like page 9 in the study shows drains that run to unknown locations, which is really sick. I mean, when you're washing off steam cleaning engines or cars or trucks, I mean, it just runs down a drain to nowhere. And then the other picture is about the damaged condition of the site's asphalt. So this is all leaching down into the groundwater that goes out to the ocean, I would imagine. So you talk about in here about, or they talk about in here, the report, that it's very damaging to have our equipment right down by the ocean, but it seems to be damaging to have this by the ocean as well. So I thought that you wanted us to kind of prioritize some of these tasks, but I don't think we're there, right?
Correct. I think we're just looking for the general direction. With negotiations with Cayucas, who knows how that's going to shake out and where we're going to land with that. I didn't want to, mm-hmm. Get the cart before the horse too much. There's some big steps here and some big hurdles. The concrete plant would have to permit their upgrade, and there's some big hurdles there. And so I think we just sort of need to pick kind of the general direction, and then the options will shake out a little bit better as we get down that road.
And I think the last comment I'd make, since Ms. Winholtz had alluded to the consolidation, management partners had talked about putting some departments together, and I just noticed back here that the Parks Department has 6 weed eaters and edgers, and then Streets has 8 of them. And I don't even think this is listed here, I don't even think I have 8 Streets workers. I have 2 with 8 of these. I almost think we need a citywide auction on some of this stuff, to tell you the truth. That would be a fundraiser.
Okay, there's some things over at Brannigan's we could put in the auction, too, I think. I, too, agree with what Betty said at the beginning. I liked her analysis of it. I'm really glad that the concrete plant is willing to make a move to accommodate all of this and to do it with such a positive attitude, and I liked their suggestions as well. So I would go with option 3 and working with the concrete plant to make it work for all of us.
Madam Mayor, mm-hmm. I'd like to make a motion then that we direct staff to work with the concrete plant folks to come up with a design that keeps them in business and create an option probably based on 3 that also allows us to not impact the storage at the RV park.
That's fine.
All right. Before we go to the next new business thing, I want to just see, what does anybody want to pull off consent, and then we can approve those things that we don't want to pull, and maybe some people will be released that way. So who wants to pull what?
I'd like to pull A3, A4, A7, and A8.
Well, maybe this will work or not. Okay.
And A8 might actually be really easy.
7 and 8. Okay. Anybody have anything else they want to pull?
I'll move approval of...
I want to pull A1
the
and
minutes,
A.
Yeah.
I want to pull A1.
Okay. I'll move approval of A2, 5, and 6.
Second.
A 9? Was there a 9?
No.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Yes, it was.
She said I moved approval.
Seconded.
I second.
No, I think
Melody seconded. Okay. So we're approving A2, 5, and 6. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. And Melody, you said there'd be a quick one on A8? Is that just a quick question, or does other people want to discuss A8?
Oh, I want to discuss.
I have
all right. So we'll hold off on that.
Okay.
Then. Okay. I don't know if that helped anybody, but maybe. Okay. All right, so now we will move to item D5, which is the Harbor Lease Management Policy, and this goes to Rick. Okay, we got all the staff here tonight. We're keeping you all busy, aren't we?
Good evening, Mayor and Council again. This item's on at your request. Would you like a staff report, or would you just like to discuss it?
Well, maybe that's best if we just ask questions of it. Anybody have this was a Harbor Lease Management Policy review. And so we just kind of went through where we are on all our leases. And anybody have questions or comments that they want to offer?
I'll start. Mr. Elgott, I sent you an email. I don't know if you had time to find out. On the first page, on third paragraph, you give us some financial statistics from 1988 and 1998. And then I was, 2008 would be logical. Can you give us a figure on what the lease revenues are for the last year?
Yeah, the estimated revenue, lease revenues for 07, 08 were $1.33 million. We have not. We receive our lease revenues in arrears for the percentage of gross sales rent, so we don't have a total yet for actual revenues.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? I did call and ask one question, and that's how many Pipkin leases we have left. And I think you said 4?
Yes, 4.
Okay. How long is the time on those? Do you know?
They were executed in 1968. They were 50-year leases, so they're all up in 2018.
18, okay. All right. Any other questions or comments?
Just a question about the Pipkin leases. So when they come up again, do they remain Pipkin leases? They will, become something different?
They will terminate in 2018. It would be up to the city whether we would choose to renegotiate with the existing tenants new leases in the city's new master lease format.
I see. And just for the public, the location of those is very south, isn't it?
They're all over the place.
They're all over the place.
Gray's Gallery. I won't give you the numbers because so people can...
Yeah.
Gray's Gallery is a Pipkin lease. The aquarium, the Tyler's, is a Pipkin lease. The Garamore's lease in front of the for the dock, mostly the dock and a portion of the fish market there at the foot of Beach Street.
Right.
And there's one other that's slipping my mind right now. The fishbowl. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Rob. Yeah, the fishbowl at Yep.
Yeah, it's just for the public because we talk about these leases and we talk about the Pipkin leases, and so thank you.
There is another set of leases that are kind of similar that were done in 1962.
Leases in a way that will strive to support Tideland's visitor-serving lease businesses to increase revenues consistent with adopted city plans and policies and coordinated with city planning and land uses. Fine, wonderful. I'd like to add a phrase, something about and with protection of the resource. And I bring that up because I think that was one of the concerns if we are a little forward-looking about that, that was a concern for the Anderson building was what do you call the stuff in the water?
Not eelgrass. Algae,
eelgrass. The eelgrass. And so it's not just the protection of the eelgrass and the water. It's that whole area. And I would like to see that phrase added to that paragraph or something similar to that. So that's a suggestion I'm making that I know it would have to come back. So I'm raising that. Another suggestion I would like to have us look at is on page 4 of 8. And it's under paragraph B. where it talks about the reasons, the two things that we look at when we talk about the appropriate length of leases, and everybody's getting the max out right now. We did 50-year leases, 45-year leases recently. The last sentence says, the appropriate term for the new lease will be determined by the size of the lease site and the level of private investment proposed for the public property. And I think that there are other considerations besides those two. And I don't know that I know what they are, but I think, you know, the list at the bottom doesn't is somewhat informative about that. And I know it's talking to a different issue about the standards, but I think those are not my only two considerations when I want to think about lease length. And so I'd like to have the council think about maybe altering that a little bit.
Well, excuse me, but what would be your other considerations then other than size and private investment? What comes to mind?
Well, one of the things that's coming up is, and it says, I don't know if it's in this paragraph, I think it's actually in a different paragraph, and probably Mr. Algert knows exactly where it is, but where we're talking about leases coming up at the same time that our neighbors and trying to get them to consolidate. And we've done that a lot mm-hmm. now because we had really old buildings and they were kind of, the old funky Morro Bay fishing town.
It's
and
right
now we've
paragraph.
Kind of consolidated. We've made things like Marina Square, and we've made things like the Boatyard, and we've done other kinds of pushing things together.
It's on that same page under lease renewal.
Okay.
It does address that.
Yeah. And so what I'm saying is now that we've done some of that, I don't know that I want all of the Embarcadero to look huge and big with big projects. I'd like some little places left, and I think in particular of the Whale's Tail. Again, we alluded to that at the last meeting, where not everything needs to go up and mm-hmm. out and get bigger and spend millions of dollars on. But that's not accounted for in this language here. And so I'm thinking that we need to talk about that and say what other things are important to us in terms of how that whole area is going to eventually look.
Madam Mayor, isn't that a policy issue that would be handled either by us as policy or planning rather than a legal code?
Well, this isn't legal. This is our policy statement. So that's why I thought it was appropriate to speak of it now.
Well, this is sort of the driving force for the lease.
Yeah.
But wouldn't our zoning and, well, whatever.
Okay. Go ahead. Your other items?
I think those were my
private investment company to process the permits, design the project, and construct it with private funds. Mm. In a building lease, you've got a building that you own, and you're typically having much less investment by the tenant. Therefore, you can charge more rent. You have control of design issues and things like that.
And so would you say that we only have one ground lease left?
We actually can't think of any ground leases per se. Did you ask about ground leases or building leases?
All of our
leases are ground leases. That's what we've done here in the city of Morro Bay is offer the bare land. Initial construction was long ago for many of these projects, but we treat them as ground leases when we look at a renewal, which oftentimes is a significant, if not total, redevelopment with major cost by the investor versus a building, say a building would come back to the city, we would choose to terminate a lease and put a building out to bid in its current condition, much less investment required by the tenant. We should charge more rent.
So we're on the Embarcadero on the west side, we use ground leases.
We only own or are trustees for the properties on the west side of the Embarcadero.
Okay. And so we're actually getting a lower percentage because we're treating them as ground leases rather than as building leases.
Yes, that's...
No, it's well, look at your page.
Didn't I just hear you say that ground leases we get higher rent, building leases you get less rent for?
If I said that, I confused you. I'm sorry.
Oh, all right.
So the ground lease, because it requires significant tenant investment, you're always going to get less rent. These percentage rents are included in your policy or pretty similar to percentage rents up and down the coast. Building lease rents are a little higher in Stearns Wharf, for example, in Santa Barbara and Santa Cruz on the boardwalk, but depending on your location. But they're pretty consistent.
Well, and now that we have new modern buildings, would we not want to change to a building lease rather than a ground lease?
That's a policy decision on the council. You've got to take a few more steps than just change. In other words, you'd have to typically you would say, for example, in the Whale's Tail, we could treat that as a building lease, let the lease expire, and just lease it out as is, and certainly get a much higher rent, percentage rent, because it would require much less investment by the tenant. In the case, I've taken this forward as a proposal that we would entertain. We've actually got council's authorization to issue a request for proposals for that site. We're assuming you're going to treat it like a ground lease, and we're going to want major investment by the tenant in a scope that would be similar to where it is, but it's still going to take a total rebuild of the building. That's an old 1950s abalone plant. So I think that's a pretty good example of where you don't really have a good physical plant to just treat it as a building lease and just lease the building out as is. We would be better off, and my recommendation would be treat it like a ground lease and request proposals for people that are going to do significant investment. But I got the message from the council that we would like to keep the scope and footprint close to what it is now. Hopefully that clarified things a little. Mm-hmm.
And the boats, like the Papagallo and Chablis, where did they fit into this? Because I didn't see them listed here.
They're subleasing from...
Okay. Bill? Mm-hmm. Okay, Rick?
Yeah, if we're going to talk about verbiage, the only thing I'd like to see, whenever I'm looking at a lease, I always consider what the benefit for the city is. So last sentence on B on page 4 of 8, I would think something that, like, the appropriate term for the new lease would be determined by the size of the lease, the level of private investment, and the level or the degree of city benefit said lease will provide.
I would chime in. That was the only other item I could think of that would deal with the term. We look at, you know, could be possibly the public benefit that's being brought by that, either the boardwalk or some other type of benefits that could deal just with the term and maybe get a longer term or some other terms. So.
That's good. Okay. Melody, anything you want to add?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to follow on one of the things that Ms. Winholtz was talking about, and this is this notion of consolidation, Rick, on page 5 of 8, underneath 3. You know, they until adjacent sites become available for consolidation. And then in the next one, in the CF district, the city should attempt to consolidate leases to facilitate things like seafood processing plants and such. So I'm just wondering, what does consolidation mean? Does it mean putting two together like we did when we got the Marina Square and I think probably Boatyard? Or does it mean that more like what happened down with Verges and Harbor Hut and whatever the other one, Great American Fish Company, GAFCO, so that the three of them came up, but they didn't like go together? Does consolidate to you mean that they come up at the same time or that they get mushed together?
That really two different things there, I think. We had a lot of discussion on this particular concept in dealing with the Mid-Embarcadero when we adopted this policy in 2000 and 2001. And a lot of it came out of in the Mid-Embarcadero where we have some 45-foot wide lease sites. When those and the Otter Rock comes to mind, because I struggled with that early on in my career here. 45-foot wide lease site didn't, and by the time you put in vertical access and you're limited with heights, you had a fairly limited project in terms of being able to return revenue for investment, and the tenant was immediately trying to push the envelope, trying to convert area that wasn't necessarily meant for revenue generation into seating. So what we see is, and my belief is, that these 45-foot wide lease sites are difficult to develop with the modern design criteria in the Mid-Embarcadero. And there is sometimes benefits, and we, of course, got one to mind possibly right now with what we're dealing with at the old Outrigger and the Fishbowl. There may be benefits in looking at consolidating sites, therefore allowing one view corridor, okay, things like that. Now, there's a little bit different situation in the area that's north of Beach Street where we talked about consolidating commercial fishing uses. And in that particular instance that you talked about, we encouraged Verges, Harbor Hut, and GAFCO to go together for many years on their water area plan because it would bring some, hopefully, consistency to the water area uses in the dock. So that was a little bit different there. to hopefully plan together on how the docks were designed might better maximize the space there, and I think they've achieved that.
Well, it does, and I appreciate that kind of consolidation.
If it can be worked out in a partnership, and we'll see how that one works. It's got some difficulty issues making sure both projects get done because you have two parties instead of one, but hopefully that project will work.
Well, then, Madam Mayor, do we get my comment?
Well, no, what I was going to say is we've got several suggestions. The first one is on page 2 of 8, where Betty wants to add a phrase about protection of resources. Is everyone in agreement with that? Yes? Okay. And then next is Rick's suggestion on page 4 of 8 on paragraph B, adding wording regarding public benefit. Mm-hmm. Everyone agreeing about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm sorry, Betty, what was the other one?
This concept of consolidation, I'm not sure how to address that or how to come back with other language. I'm hearing what Mr. Algert says about the frustration of that, and yet I don't want that to be the only that's done every single time. And maybe it's just a matter of adding a phrase about that. But that's a consideration, but it's not mandatory.
Well, maybe it could be something like what we just discussed about, you know, consolidation, if that is the best way to preserve view corridors. But if there's a project that perhaps has something, you know, maybe an outdoor use that wouldn't be obstructing views, that maybe they could do it on that. So maybe the wording just to be something about the basic desire is to make sure that we keep the view corridors, and consolidation is favored if that's the only way to achieve that.
Could I make a quick suggestion on the language? First of all, if you look under lease renewal over here, where it says lease expiration date should be encouraged to coincide where adjoining sites may have mutual planning benefits. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that language, yeah, that they could be planning separately, like the Verges-Gafco thing. So on page 5 of 8, if you take the paragraph just below number 3, and the first sentence says leases that are not renewed should be put out to public bid or kept in short-term interim lease arrangements until adjacent sites become. We could just change the until to the word should. Should adjacent sites become, you know.
Okay.
And then you could go to the next paragraph and where it says in the CF district, the city should attempt. We could just change that to in the CF district, the city may attempt to.
Okay. Right.
So it lightens it up a little bit, mm-hmm, and doesn't make it so imperative.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are you following?
Everybody
okay?
Agree with that? Okay. Is that consensus on that?
I actually didn't. Could you repeat the second part?
Yes. Yes, Rick. Sure.
Okay.
It's the paragraph just above fair market rent on page 5 in the CF district. The city may attempt to consolidate leases instead of should. And so it leaves it out there as an opportunity, an idea, but it doesn't put such mandatory feel to it, the should thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Case by case, you know.
All right, and Betty, did you have one more? It seems like you did one.
Whether or not we want to talk about going from ground leases to building leases in order to get greater
percentage.
But that
would be another discussion.
That would be another discussion, I would think. And then... something just occurred to me. It was under this lease of standards for renewing, mm-hmm, a lease. Okay.
Right. Is that not correct? I mean, I assume that's
correct. I think the council did a pretty good job there with A, is setting out some specific criteria on what makes a good tenant. You're right in describing that's one of the reasons why we would renew a lease. And I think when this last line under lease renewal was something of discussion too in 2000 and 2001. In some cases, the city should not renew a lease either for purposes of consolidating sites or pursue other extenuating public benefits. It basically kind of leaves you in a case by case. It says, in general, our policies are these, but in some cases, we may choose not to renew leases. And it gives you the flexibility to make decisions within your general policy guideline.
Okay. So does staff feel they have enough direction there and consensus on the comments? All right. Do you need a motion on that?
Are
you going to bring it back for us to approve?
Yeah, that'd probably be best.
We'll bring it back as a consent item with those changes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And now in order, we're going to go to item D9, which is authorization to hire two part-time police officer recruits pending resignation of two existing police officers. John?
Actually, this is going to be a team effort. I'll start out with the staff report, and then
it's got his name on it, so I turn to him.
Chief Duran will answer questions. Currently, the city of Morro Bay has two officers, two current police officers that are in background phase of testing with other law enforcement agencies. It's certainly anticipated that these officers will be given job offers in the very near future. As a result, we've conducted a recruitment to establish an eligibility list in anticipation of filling these two vacancies. The local police academy that most of our recruits attend is at Allen Hancock College, and that starts next Monday on July 28th. And as a result, testing and hiring must be done prior to sponsoring two police recruits in this academy. If we've missed this deadline, it will be another 6 months before another academy starts in January, forcing us to conduct this recruitment process again. We feel the best case scenario for our situation, which is kind of unique at this point, allows for hiring two part-time recruits, having them attend the six-month academy, followed by 4 months of field training, and that's where a recruit is teamed with a corporal for training purposes. At the conclusion of this 10 months, the city will have two fully trained officers ready to work independently. Should the city council not approve tonight's request, the police department would potentially be down two police officer positions for a period of 16 months. The last day of employment for our two existing officers in background is unknown, but it's expected that they will be receiving offers in the very near future. If the two officers give notice after July 28th and hiring two new police recruits is authorized, there would be some expense of part-time recruit salaries until the existing officers leave. However, based on the salaries of our current officers, their projected salary savings will likely cover the majority of the part-time recruit costs. If authorized to hire the two part-time recruits, the city would pay them through the six-month academy but have no obligation to hire them at the conclusion of the academy if, in the rare instance, our two existing police officers do not receive offers from the current background checks that are likely two positions. That concludes my staff report, or our staff report, and we're both happy to answer questions. Any questions for staff?
Betty? I have one. Mr. DeRohan, when we pay, and I assume we're paying for their going through the training, do we require them to be here for so many years?
Actually, that's illegal to do.
I thought L.A. did that. I heard that a few
many years ago, and that was ruled unconstitutional. So what we do in the contract, and even the city attorney and I have talked about it, and it's kind of borderline, but in the last person that we sent through the academy and in the contract, we say that should you choose to go to another agency before you graduate from the academy, you have to pay us back the academy expenses. Mm-hmm. But we cannot ask them to pay back any salaries or anything like that. And it's no longer legal to require that they stay with the city for any period of time.
Could we ask them to pay back the academy even if they leave before 5 years?
No.
It just has to be at the end of the training?
Yes.
Okay. Other questions? Melody?
I have one question. What do they do for the $22 per hour if they're not sworn police? What do they do for us? Is this to go to school we're paying them?
That's correct. In other words, we hire them and we put them through the training. If we didn't pay them, then they would be hired by somebody else. They would not do it for us for free.
So we pay them and sponsor them, and does sponsoring, is that an additional thing like tuition?
Yes, that's what every agency does. What they'll do is you hire somebody and then you put them through the academy. In the past, we've been able to get some lateral transfers and people that have already graduated from the academy, but lately those types of recruits have diminished, and we weren't successful in recruiting those. So most of the applicants this time were open, what we call open enrollees, which we have to sponsor through an academy.
Any other questions? All right, comments? No comments either? A motion?
Well, only that I think, you know, this is something we're just going to be living with. This is something that's not going to go away as long as our salary structure is the way it is. We're always going to be in a situation where we're training people and educating them, and then they're going to leave us for higher paying jobs. And it's just one of those things we're just going to have to live with.
I would add to that we're not alone. We just had the mayor's meeting last week, and Royal Grande's mayor was saying the same thing. Grover Beach, it's not just us. And certainly we're going to be doing whatever we can to help that situation as far as what we have to available for our salaries and things as we go through the management partners review. But right now it's a fact of life.
Move approval of D9. Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you. Okay, and then we go to item D1.
Did we skip a break?
Oh, there you go.
I have it after item D2. We're ahead of time for a break.
Item B3.
You need a break? Does anybody know where Bill went? Okay, we'll wait. We're going to wait for Bill to come back. I called us to order before he returned. Sorry. Yeah, we... We're going to do A's.
Yes, I'm uncomfortable approving this contract tonight. This is a resolution appointing Andrew Luker as city manager and approving the contract. And that's because I counted up. I have about five issues with the contract, and we ran out of time at closed session tonight to really talk about those issues. And so I was wondering, I would move approval of continuing this to a later date so that I'd have a chance to speak with the rest of council, perhaps at the next closed session, about some of the issues that I have about the contract itself.
Okay, just for the public to know, this is a resolution appointing Andrea Luker as the city manager and approving the contract.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments on that or...
I think I made a motion. Did I make it a motion? I made a motion that we would just continue this to the next council meeting, the August 11th, I think, probably at closed session discussion so that I could just have a chance. We only had about 5 minutes tonight. It was just awful, actually. So that I could resolve myself about some of these issues on the contract.
All right.
So
I'll second that. Okay. Discussion?
Did you press your button?
I just turned it on, the mic.
Okay.
Well, I was getting, if it came to a vote, I was getting ready to vote. As far as discussion, a concern I have regarding this, I can understand the feeling, but the concern I have with this is, to me, it delays a lot of things, including our talking about the management partners thing. Till we get this nailed down, and I, you know, we just keep putting all this stuff back. I understand your concerns. I just am concerned about the delays.
Rick, any other comments?
Well, I am too, because I think it would be a while until we would, you know, be getting together to address this, wouldn't it? It would be like August 11th or 13th.
Right,
myself, I'm ready to move forward with this.
Okay, Betty, any comments?
Well, I second the motion to continue it. If we're not going to continue it, that I probably have a couple of comments I want to make. I know of one insertion that I'd like to change.
Okay, well, all right, we can deal with the one motion then. I don't have a problem with the contract as it is, so I'm in favor of it.
And I would just say that I have about five objections, but the three that I think are key for the public to know is that we are not making any limits on dues and subscriptions, professional development. These are just put in, and the transportation one I've already talked about at close, but to consider not using a mileage rate when people travel, but instead let them use the city credit card. These are issues having to do with monetary compensations or money that the city may have to spend on this contract. And I just don't feel that they've been well talked about. Also, the education assistance, I was talking that we need to knock that out a bit more in better discussions with the candidate, actually, with Ms. Luker. And we started some of those discussions, and now it's just come boiled down to kind of a we don't really know.
Line whether it'll be practical or even wanted, depending on what it would take as far as our time away from the city. So I think that's why I like the wording the way it is. It leaves it open to discussion and working out at the time.
Madam Mayor, the specific change that I would make would be under Section 3B. And what I would like to do is The City Council shall evaluate the manager performance semi-annually, and I want to insert the words beginning November 2008. And the reason I say that is that we have changed when we did our evaluations previously to make sure that the old council does the evaluation rather than the new council, who's only been in for a week or two. Mm-hmm. So I would just like to insert those words beginning November 2008.
Okay, and where are you inserting those?
Under Section 3B.
3B, okay, I got 2B.
Is that, Madam Mayor, is that something that needs to be in the contract, or is that our policy?
So should we, before we do this insertion, should we just vote on my motion and do the
We haven't even voted on the motion.
We just vote on the motion, and then we can go to talk about the language of the contract. Okay. How about that?
Okay.
Mayor Peters.
We're voting on the motion.
All right. Sorry, I was finding out where we were talking about. All right. All in favor of the motion to continue this contract?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right, 3-2.
Okay, then I would ask that we insert into Section 3B the words beginning November 2008. Because it's a little shy of the 6 months.
Okay, is that can we make that kind of a change now?
You certainly can. It's not going to make a difference. It's going to come to you because your policy was to change us to do it in October, November, before a new comes on. So regardless of where that language, both mine and the city manager's, comes to you in October and November.
Okay.
It's just clarity.
All right. Do we have consensus on that from the council? Yes. Okay. And what else, Betty?
I'm going to disagree with your evaluation of our discussion of Section 6D, which is about the educational assistance. My memory is very clear that we said that this is something that we wanted to have happen, and that that needs to be in there. And if it's clear that this is what we are expecting, then I'm okay with it. But I think Ms. DeMeritt's point is that it's not clear that this, and certainly from your comment, Ms. Mayor, that you're not expecting this to necessarily happen. And we had that discussion, I believe, about whether it would work with the job or not and that kind of thing, and we came to the conclusion we wanted this. So I just want that real clear in there. And then my third one, I'm going to remember it.
Well, while you're looking, in response to that, we also discussed what kind of education. There's a lot of options. It doesn't necessarily have to be a university. It could be League of California Cities programs. There were all kinds of...
No, I think we were clear that it needed to be academic.
Madam Mayor, point of clarification, I believe we discussed it, but I don't think we voted on it or arrived at consensus on it, because I didn't support it in the first place.
Right.
So it may have been that we were all under the impression that it went some direction or another, but I heard individual council members voicing opinions, but I didn't see us take a vote.
But we do see it in here.
Yes.
Because we have. Could you explain? I thought that was supposed to be 7%, and why is it not?
It should be. I was confused that it had gone from 7% to 8%. We can certainly plug back in the 7%, but it doesn't change.
Okay. So that's. I would ask that that be put in then, Madam Mayor, on Exhibit A, number one. Mm-hmm. It's a per 7%.
Oh, 7%. Okay.
So those are my two changes.
Okay. All right. You were making a motion, right?
Sure.
Now, my question is, are we approving the contract and the city manager with one motion, or are they going to be two separate motions?
I would think they're one, aren't they, Rob?
It's one resolution.
Okay. One.
Okay.
All right. Make the motion with the resolution appointing Andrea Luker as city manager and approving the contract.
With the two amendments.
What?
With the two amendments just made. That
with the two amendments.
Second.
All right. Any more discussion?
Yeah, I would just like to explain that I think Andrea Luker is a fine person. This has nothing to do with her, but I'm probably going to vote no. I am going to vote no on this, and it has to do with several other issues. You know, I just wanted to explain that Andrea has always treated me with openness and fairness, and I find her enjoyable to talk to. But I'm probably going to vote no because of my own issues.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I wasn't finished with discussion.
I'm sorry. Sorry. Okay. All right.
More discussion.
Okay. Discussion.
I'm sorry. I just wanted it on the record that I'm thrilled that Ms. Luker has accepted this position. I think she has a genuine passion for the city of Morro Bay and a real passion for wanting to do a good job. I think she represents the people that work for her in a very positive way, and I'm very happy to have her lead our team into these next few very trying years that we're going to face.
And Betty, did you have something else?
I'll just add that I spoke with Ms. Luker last Friday and let her know that I would not be voting affirmative on this, and that we've had that discussion.
All right. Well, then I'm going to add my comment, too, and that is that I think that Andrea has done an exemplary job in her interim position, gone a little bit beyond the call of duty, I think, and I admire that, and I think that her history with the city will serve her well in the future, and I'm glad we're doing this.
Since we're all issuing comments, I will say that I know that, in my opinion, she has done a surprisingly, not that I didn't think she would, but has exceeded my expectations, let me say, in the job as interim. And I know has done a significant amount of work so far on trying to come up with ways to implement the management partners thing, which we will be unveiling at the August 13th meeting. And so I think that she's so far done an excellent job.
Okay. Are we ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay. Demerit and Winholtz opposed. Congratulations, Andrea. It's official.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's skip to A7 because I'm sorry. We still have somebody waiting here, and I didn't know we were going to take so long on all these others, so let's go straight to that issue, which...
Stay a walkway, given different councils and different owners of the properties, or...
Ms. Demerit, this resolution would run with the property, but another point in time, somebody could petition a council to change that resolution and have another document recorded that would absolve them of that condition.
Yeah, that's the way I understood it pretty much. Things come and go. And then probably to Rob, if you could help us out on some of Ms. Novak's comments. She said that A7 does not address liability safety issues on the path because we're requiring the residents to construct and maintain. And I think it was the maintain part that might lead to exposure to legal action. Do you agree with that, or is
yes,
there anything in
by
here?
By them agreeing to the abandonment and taking over the maintenance of it, and it's on their real property now, they would be the liability party and have homeowners insurance to protect them.
Because we're abandoning the easement, so the city's entirely out of it then. And so it's a walkway that goes over private land.
We are reserving a public access easement, yeah. So it is in benefit to the public. The public can use that. But as I added the wording back in from the Planning Commission hearing, that they suggested that the property owner be responsible for constructing and maintaining that pathway.
Madam Mayor.
Mm-hmm.
This is going south for me. I mean, I can see the abandonment. I can see that, you know, we're no longer responsible for trying to pave something that was never paved by the city in the first place, most likely. And, you know, we don't have to go in and clear the weeds out of what should be pavement. But I have a very hard time with us requiring them to install a sidewalk down the middle of the property and then requiring them to maintain the sidewalk and ensure... carry the insurance on it. If we're going to have a sidewalk in there, then it should be like a sidewalk anywhere else as far as I'm concerned. If it breaks up after it's built, I think it's a city sidewalk. And, you know, I just have a hard time going down the middle of this property with a required sidewalk and saying, but it's not ours, it's yours. But the gun's to your head because we want it, you don't, and you're going to have to insure it. And so I have a hard time with that, and I'm not going to support it to that extent.
But you'd support something where the city took responsibility for the sidewalk since they're getting free land.
If the city wants to put in a sidewalk, I say, fine, let's put in a sidewalk.
How about if we let them put in the sidewalk and we'll maintain it?
If we require them to put in the sidewalk, that's fine, too, which happens in front of new construction. Mm-hmm. But as far as I'm concerned, it becomes a city sidewalk then.
Okay.
If it's in the middle of that utility easement, it's still a city sidewalk. And if we're going to say you got to have a sidewalk, then we need to take it over after it's constructed the way we would any other city sidewalk going down a street, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned.
Well, is there a way, Rob, that we can add wording that says that the city will maintain the liability for the public sidewalk? So we can do that.
If you want to take on that liability, many cities are using the Street and Highways Code, and I can't think of the name of it. Rob probably knows it, to, in fact, require in front of all businesses and residents maintain the sidewalks and the liability for
the street is responsible for maintaining between the curb and their property line in a safe condition. Cities take that to mean that if the sidewalk is cracked, lifted, that you repair that sidewalk. There's some provisions in the Streets and Highways Code that you have to give notice. If they don't repair it within 30 days, the city comes in and makes the repairs and then liens the property to recover those funds.
Question.
Okay. You said it first, then you.
Does that give the property owner or the person adjacent to the sidewalk any control over access to that sidewalk? I'm thinking in terms of someone might do something that would cause damage to the sidewalk. I know that sounds, you know, but or you end up with, in our case in Morro Bay, where half of the city street trees on our business district raise the sidewalk. And so, you know, it seems to me that that's kind of, I understand that cities are doing it because we're all looking for ways to save money and push more costs back on the taxpayer so we don't have to pay them. But I'm just wondering then what rights the person has. Do they then sue the city because it's a street tree because they had to repair it, or do they just cut it down, or does everybody just ignore it? And I know it sounds a little perverse, but again, I'm trying to figure out. You know, it's great for us to keep pushing costs on people, and I can see that the public needs to pay for the benefits they get, but I'm just, you know, I have a hard time with coming along and saying, okay, this is a sidewalk you get benefit from and you're going to pay for it, but you have no control over how it gets the condition it is.
Rick?
If it were to be a city liability, it would, I assume, come under our umbrella liability insurance. If those residents took the liability, what kind of money are we talking about?
Could they get it?
You have how many residents sharing a liability of one sidewalk? What does that come to in dollars and cents?
I don't have a number for that, what their homeowner's insurance would be on that.
Could I ask another question of Rob? On the back of the staff report, they show this emergency access and common driveway easement. A sewer easement going right down the middle. Isn't that where the walkway goes? Or Rod? Either one?
The walkway could really go anywhere within that. It could meander within that easement.
Because it's a fairly big easement.
Yeah, it's 20-foot wide easement that we've reserved along there.
If the walkway is on top of a city easement, then does that bring the liability back to the city automatically, or?
I don't think it's automatically.
Okay.
Maybe Rob Schultz can help me.
I think he's doing computer research.
Yeah, it's not automatically. I mean, it's where you want to shift the burden. I mean, if you want to shift the burden, you can. If you don't want to, you don't have to. I mean, it's your abandonment, and you can do with it the terms that you decide. I was just trying to look under the street and highways if that automatically shifts it, and that goes more to the global issue of whether if we do switch to making the property owners responsible for all the sidewalks, on whether that would change the liability issue, but I haven't found it yet.
Well, I just want to, and then I'll exit this discussion, but I just want to recall my comments at the last Flips a skateboard. I don't think I'm paying for it. But this goes right across their private property, but it also goes across a city easement. So I think I don't really know what to do, to tell you the truth.
Well, what I was going to suggest, since they're not allowed to post this as private property because we're putting a public walkway through the middle of it. If we put the walkway on the easement, I see no reason to not say that the property owners maintain the walkway, but the city holds the liability for any injury on the walkway. Now, that means the city is going to have to inspect that walkway and make sure that the property owners are maintaining it. So there's going to have to be a mutual agreement there. And should they not be maintaining it, then that may invalidate the liability situation or at least make them an also suable.
But, you know, one kid goes down that on a skateboard and breaks their neck or whatever, and city liability for that? Mm-hmm. Just consider what that's going to cost.
They could do that on, you know, any sidewalk in town.
They could, and probably pretty easily on sidewalks in town.
It's probably why we don't have any children in that neighborhood.
All right. So, well, what about that? What about that possibility? Let's talk about the sidewalk will be constructed and maintained by the property owners on the easement portion of the property, and that liability for that sidewalk shall remain with the city, with the understanding that the property owners will be maintaining it. Does that work for everybody? Does that work for legal staff? He's still studying the computer.
I'm sorry. I was looking at the streets highway codes, which does allow you to shift that liability.
Okay. So will that work?
So what's your?
The property owner is going to maintain. They're going to construct and maintain the sidewalk on the easement part of the property, and the city will retain liability with the understanding that the property owner has to meet their obligation of maintaining it.
And what if they don't?
Then they're then we sue them.
Oh.
Or we fix it and put a lien on their property.
There you go. Okay. That'll work. Okay. Now, I have to put that in a motion. Pardon? Is it going to have to come back to us then with new wording?
I think...
No?
No.
It would be the deed restriction that will file. The easement will have that language in it regarding the maintenance and the liability issue.
There is a deed restriction.
There's an easement recorded on the property there that mm-hmm. will go down the middle that we recorded on that property, which can have conditions in it.
Okay.
This easement acts as the deed on the property. So this resolution should contain any language to that deed restriction that should be in there. So we'll need to add language to item number 3 regarding the liability of the easements, if that's the direction that council
chooses
to go.
Okay, and does that have to then come back to us again, or we can just go ahead and approve that now? Okay. All right, so do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, thank you. All right, now we go back to A4, Melody.
Yes, I pulled A4. I'll just thank you for all the great stuff you put in here, Susan. This is revisions to the master fee schedule. I was surprised to read your email today that in April 1998, that city council decided they didn't want to see across-the-board increases. So we do these bit by bit, piece by piece. But thank you for going through them and finding some things. Now, what I take exception to, and strong exception to, is this notion about the utility deposit. And so let me ask you, this notion about a utility deposit is that we would charge $150 per water meter, correct?
Yes.
And that we would not only charge new people for their water hookups, but we would also grandfather in everybody in town.
We could do that if council wants to. We could go ahead and go back on the tenants that are in existence. It's something that we could base it on their credit history with us. Have they been current all the time? Have they had bad checks? Or have they had an excellent account? There are things that we could do, and it's an option.
Yeah, and I always like working with the gray stuff because I don't think it's right that we have zero when other cities charge as much as 180 for this kind of thing. And it's a deposit because people are late or don't pay their bill at all, or not late, but because they don't pay their bill,
Correct.
And then we're out money, and we're out money, and then we shut off their water, and we're out time and effort, right? So I'm just thinking we don't need to be at zero, but I don't want to go to 150. And I also think I like what you're saying there, that I don't like just going out wholesale charging everybody in Morro Bay. I think there's something like 6,500 homes. I wouldn't want to get that bill, $150.
It would be tenants only.
Tenants
so
only?
Just tenants, not
excuse
not
me,
owners.
Why would we charge only renters?
The municipal code specifically states that we could charge a deposit to a tenant, but not an owner.
That's horrible. That's absolutely shocking. Is that because, though, I've lived in the same place forever because I own it, but sometimes renters kind of come and go?
Yes. And with an owner, we have the ability to lien the property.
Put a lien on my property.
Right.
It's still pretty creepy.
In there, I can't do that.
It's like taking the people with the least ability to pay, it seems, and socking them with $150.
Yeah,
okay. So then I wanted to ask you about other emails that you sent today. When I forget my question exactly, but I asked you a question about, you know, how many times have we shut people off on average? And I don't know if you have those emails in front of you.
Yes, I do.
The
agreement with our collection agency that if a bill is paid in the initial, I believe it's the initial 10 days, and I'd have to verify that, that we get almost all of it. And then after their initial, you know, try to get the collection, if they don't get anything, then it's a 60-40 split. We get 60%, they take 40.
Okay, so my feeling about this is I wouldn't have it be 150. I would like to negotiate that down a bit to somewhere near, like, Pismo Beach is 90 as a deposit. And then I would like to not grandfathered in on all of our current tenants, but probably suggest that we use it just with new people who are looking for a water hookup.
Okay.
Okay, that's just my suggestion.
I'm not clear how you're using grandfathering. Usually that means you bring people in without having to do anything different.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry, I'm just using that.
So you're saying you don't want it to be retroactive to people that have
retroactive.
Already been.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want it to be all retroactive back to people.
Right.
Madam Mayor, I had this same conversation this morning at City Hall, and the suggestion I made at that time, and we might consider it, is that if we want to start that with any new hookups, that's fine, and that I suggested that when you have someone where we actually go out and shut the water off, that we have a turn-on fee, and then we also make them pay the deposit at the time we turn it back on. Or if it's, you know, if you want to be nice about it, you give them 30 days to pay the deposit, because at that point we have someone who we may have to turn it off again, and we're going to need that deposit. So I would say anyone who we have to shut it off, or we give them so many shut off warnings in a given period of time, we then make them pay the deposit. Otherwise, if it's a tenant, as far as I'm concerned, with a good record, we shouldn't put that on them. But we might consider any new hookups that we would charge a deposit of some type.
Okay. Other comments, Rick?
I don't want to make any blanket kind of fee schedule for people that are playing by the rules. I don't think they're the ones that should be affected by it. On the other hand, I got no problem with socking it to the people that don't play by the rules and that cost the city money, and we need to recoup, you know, whatever time and effort and money it takes on our end. I also think that the service charges for the non-sufficient fund are very low.
And those rates are actually in the government code section of the state of California.
So we can't change that.
No, those are the amounts that we can charge.
Well, that's too bad. But Yeah, I'm not for affecting the folks that play by the rules.
Betty, do you have comments?
I am not in favor of retroactive rules either. Make sure that he would or she would come up to the plate for that. So we haven't had that discussion, but it doesn't sound like we're going to go there. So I'm happy with a $90 deposit on new hookups.
Ms. Slayton had a comment, or I was asking her about, can we do what Ms. Winholtz is talking about?
Yes, we can. I believe we would have to, and I'm sure that Mr. Schultz would chime in on this one. I think we'd have to have a change in our municipal code, but we could very well require owners only to sign up for water and have them recoup the water costs from their tenant, however, you know, through the rent or...
How's that done with the garbage? That doesn't go to a tenant necessarily, does it, or does it?
I believe the garbage goes to resident only, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
You mean to owner only?
Yes. I'm sorry, owner only. I believe that's the case because we do lien property with the garbage company.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Okay.
In using the word deposit, does that indicate that they get the thing back at some point? And if so, when?
We could give it back to them after a year of good credit. We could hold on to it until they leave, until they vacate the property. That's something that, you know, we can negotiate as well.
Because I know that who was it? It used to be the cell phone companies, when they required a deposit, it was for 1 year of acceptable payment history, and then they gave the money back, or in the case of the cell phone outfits, they credit the account with that amount so they don't mail a check out. But that seems to me like a bookkeeping nightmare if you start getting into that stuff.
It's not bad, actually. The financial software is set up to where if we put in a parameter on it to say that the deposit is only in effect for, say, 12 months, the software would automatically throw it. I believe it would automatically put it back on the account or issue or request that we issue a check to the person.
Can the software keep track of whether or not it's a late payment or a regular payment? Is that asking too much of the software?
Yeah, that's asking a little bit too much.
So it would be someone who would still have to go through the account when it says it's time to make sure that they actually had an appropriate payment history.
Yes. I don't think the software is, I'm not sure. Software that I've dealt with in the past, some of it was sophisticated enough to do that kind of thing, to recognize that the customer hadn't had a delinquency. Others, it's a little bit vaguer because the deposit is more like a little, you know, side kept item that you can put a sunset date on, and it'll tell you that it's time to kick the deposit back, but then you have to go back and look. So I'd have to check that one out a little more thoroughly.
Rick?
If you're going to talk about that, you know, giving them back in a year or giving them back when they move or something like that, first of all, I think it's the city benefit, give them back when they move. And then you have to say, well, what's
unless anyone has some strong objections to the other fee.
Well, I think we should get consensus. We've got, I think, $100 has been mentioned as the amount.
I like 90, but I'll go with 100.
I like 90.
I like 90.
I like 100.
90 is like Paso Robles and
Slough.
I know, amazingly, Grover or Beach Pismo is 190.
Slough. Well, you know, Grover.
Nice
I like 100 too. What do you say, Bill? You're the deciding vote here. 90 or 100?
I was going to say, well, you could always go 99. No, let's make it 100.
Okay, we're going to go for 100.
And then it's not retroactive.
Not retroactive.
But I liked Bill's idea about if somebody does not pay their bill and we do have to go shut them off, when we turn it back on.
Yes.
So I think for people who do that and then we have to go turn them on, okay, well, at the time of turn on, we say, you got to put a deposit down now.
Yep.
Right. That's fine with me. That takes into consideration rule breakers.
And I agree with the deposit not being paid back until they move, because typically if you're going to skip out on something, that's when you do it. Okay. All right, so that's, you got direction on that one. Anything mm-hmm. else that you wanted specifically to change, or can we approve the rest of it?
The rest of it's fine with me.
Okay. All right, then why don't we just, I'll consider a motion to approve the master fee schedule revisions.
So moved.
Second.
Any more discussion?
Discussion.
And that includes...
I know that we as a council at some point said we wanted to do this piecemeal. But once we get it all caught up, let's bring it back in one chunk every year and just do it. We're at the point now where we can't give things away. So
that's,
I think,
true.
We need to just, you know, if we try to be fair with it, we get it set to where we're actually charging in the fees what it really costs us, and there isn't anything there that's a profit center, then let us stay on top of that. That's my opinion.
Okay.
And let me just check that with this motion to approve these, that also included the utility deposit and the adjustments.
Yeah. Yes.
That's fine?
Okay. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. Good.
And, Madam Mayor, I will need to bring back a resolution at the next meeting to confirm this.
Okay. That's great. All right. And then A8, Melody.
You know, I think this is the smallest little question I have, and it's on attachment one, a description of the utilities and capital. And it's under the essential duties and responsibilities. This is about amending the capital projects manager job description and authorizing to fill vacancies for capital projects manager, which I think will be called the utilities and then have a assistant civil engineer position. So I'm wondering, on number 12 there, it says coordinates long-term planning with the city engineer. I just wondering, who is the city engineer?
Rob Leibig.
Ah, just was wondering who it was. So you're not a civil, you're a city.
I'm also a civil engineer.
Through this whole list is predominantly in either water or wastewater. And so to me, that's utilities. And so I would rather see that position be strictly that. And as projects come up within departments, that those departments handle those projects. And if it's streets like the Harbor Walk, something like that, that would fall under Mr. Leibig as the city engineer. And that the term streets be taken out of the description for the utilities person, that all that stuff is done anyways under the other position. And so any reference to streets, it seems to me, should not be inside the utilities / project manager's job description.
Okay. Mr. Embo, would you like to respond?
Sure.
To
the reason why we did that is because we had that skill set with this position. Rob Leibig is in charge of the streets, yes, and he's also in charge of vehicle maintenance and mm-hmm. you know, all of those other
things.
Stormwater management plan and mm-hmm. all of those things. But the capital projects manager is pretty conversant in managing projects, and you have that skill set, and and that's kind of why we've done that, and it's also consistent with the resolution that the council adopted.
Exactly, and I want to undo that resolution. I think that's where I'm coming from.
I guess that's a council matter, but
yeah.
I'm just asking for the
job. So I went back on this, and when you look at it, there's actually a number of these, and you've all noticed this on the project status sheet, a number of completed items here. I think I counted there's actually 24 of these guys have been completed. And that leaves 70 projects yet to go out of the 94, which is a tremendous number that have been done or have been listed. 40 of those are in wastewater and water, so they're all under that one heading. And the other thing I guess I'm bringing up with this is that I think this is part of our discussion for August 13th about the rearranging of potentially staff and other things. So I guess I'd like to not either, my first preference would be is not to act on this until after we have that discussion and see where this fits, rather than to go ahead and approve this, keep the new position, or maintain the position that Mr. Wade's moving from and into the other one, and then talk about that other position. But if we're going to go ahead and keep the two different positions, then I'd like for the project part to go away.
Okay, Mr. Ambo, I'd like you to just respond to that. Are there downsides, upsides? What's going to be the effect?
In my personal and professional opinion, this is what works best for our department. I'm very familiar with our strengths and our weaknesses, and we play to our strengths. I think this individual, this person that we have, is a good fit for this job. This is what we had in mind when we hired this person. We knew that we would see the day when Bill Boucher retired, and he's been coming up to speed and is very well aware of all of the projects in the pipeline and what his duties and responsibilities would be, as is Rob Leivig. So I really think this works best.
So even though they may be water projects, they still would come under Dylan's purview.
Right.
Okay.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
If I may add in a couple things. I wanted the City Council to, it's worked quite smoothly. And then I think the other thing I think it's important to note is that with this particular situation, there is no general fund impact, and that's something to keep in mind.
Okay, then the discussion, do you think this is something that should be under discussion when we go through the management partners, or is this something that's pretty much separate and we...
No, I'm sorry. I should have been clear. I'm comfortable. I think that it's been looked at thoroughly. I'm very comfortable with the direction we're going. And I think this is certainly the best scenario and how it's going to work the best for the city.
Okay. How does the rest of the council feel?
Madam Mayor, if nothing else, we've got a huge capital project that's going to take a lot of babysitting when we start phase two of the fire station, if nothing else. So, I mean, we have a lot of those things that are not necessarily water projects, but... You know, we've got a lot of stuff going on, including the sewer upgrade, the wastewater treatment plant upgrades. So, you know, if staff's this adamant about it, I see nothing wrong with it. I would certainly support this request.
Madam Mayor, can I just respond to that?
Well, let's get other people's
Surely.
Comments, too. Rick?
Well, I'm ready to make a motion. So
well,
I'd like Betty, go ahead.
Melody?
Well, I'm pretty fine with it, too, because actually... we do have capital projects going on. They are water and sewer, but I think capital projects are defined as things when you're putting a shovel in the ground and shifting things around, if we get to that. Pardon?
Big things.
Big capital things, like waste
capital
treatment plants.
Capital meaning big things.
Waste treatment plants, big water tanks, and things like that. So, and I also think, as I read down through this, it looks like, you know, project development, design and construction management, things that I know that Mr. Wade has been doing. So I'm not sure why the objection to the capital projects part of it doesn't change the salary, right? I mean, if the salary's not affected by this.
Well, part of my response is that I picked out only four projects, the capital projects, and they're not that are not within the utilities division, and those are the roundabout, the harbor walk, the fire station, and one that I can't read my handwriting on. But those are things that are not under the water department, yet this position's paid from the water department. So when he works under those projects, it does affect the general fund. It's not strictly water. He has to charge back to that. So it's both, and I think that's where I'm coming from, that I've never liked the idea that we've shifted two of our people into water when they really weren't there. Now we have an opportunity to clean that up. If he's going to be in water and wastewater, that's the utilities. Keep that there, but let's separate out general fund stuff from utility stuff that's in enterprise funds. And I think that's where I was coming from, was to kind of clean that up and make sure that stuff...
Okay, Mr. Rambo. Yeah.
Madam Mayor, whenever we do capital projects, we fund that time separately through the project. All those grant-funded projects, mm-hmm. that time is funded, and that time is coded to that project, so that's covered in the grant. That's not an impact on the general fund. Those funds Every minute he spends on a project is billed to that project. Okay. The roundabout, all that time
roundabout
spent
would be,
that.
And the harbor fund. But when it comes to the fire station, I don't think that's a grant-funded permit.
We're kind of mishandling and not going through the correct processes on a few projects. So, I mean, I don't know. It would. I mean, we've spent a lot of time on trying to figure out if this was the best. And it'd be one thing if it was the other way around. It was 80% in the general fund and 20. But 90% of the time or 80 will be in that water fund. And for those few that are outside of there, he's still the best. He's going to do the best work and all the other city personnel. So why would you switch from someone that knows what they're doing to someone that doesn't to run a project? I can't see the logic there.
Well, I think we have a lot of, because I think we're hiring another engineer or someone that's assistant engineer in the new position that Mr. Wade's eliminating, or because you talk about it as either this or this, and you have two different jobs descriptions here. Is that right?
Right. But
it's either going to be the engineer in training, or it's going to be the engineer technician 3.
Right, but they're not the requirement. There is no longer a requirement that that person be a licensed professional engineer, mm-hmm. because we filled that requirement.
Mm-hmm. And we actually have two, right? Because we've got Mr. Wade and Mr. Leibig.
Right. And Rob also does development review, which takes mm-hmm. up quite a bit of his time, and that's mm-hmm. one of those things that's kind of not, you don't have control over as much, because whoever walks through the door needs assistance, and mm-hmm. that's the nature of what that duty is. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I remember, too, when capital projects there were mistakes being made, and it was a good thing to get that under someone who knew what they were doing and could oversee all of it, whatever department it was in. I think that Mr. Ambo has been very diligent about structuring his department to a very efficient level, and he's made these advanced plans for, okay, when this happens and this person leaves, here's how I'm going to respond to that. So, and I respect that he's done that in this case, obviously, and certainly that was backed up by the staff looking at it. So I think that this one seems to be something we could proceed with now.
I move approval of A8.
She beat you to it.
Second.
We'll give the second to Rick.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Okay. Winhouse opposed. All righty. And next is item. Wait a minute. I'm lost now. I got these all out of order. D2? Is that where we're going?
D1?
How about D1?
Oh, D1. Yeah. I had that crossed off. Sorry. D1.
Okay.
And this is discussion on zero-based budgets for the 2000-2011 biennial budget. Susan.
Yes, this is the discussion on the zero-based budget.
Turn your mic on.
I have my mic on.
Oh, sorry.
Is that better?
There you go.
Okay. All right. Maybe I wasn't quite close enough. The existing budget process involves a contrast of historical revenue generation, spending patterns with the current budget, and then we project future needs while taking into account changes in the local and state economy. It's a little bit of a guessing game, but it's an educated guessing game. One of the things that we've been running up against is the instability with the state, and of course some of the local situation with stagnant revenues and expenditures that are growing out of our control. So we've been and asked for more money in the taxes, some type of tax increase. So thank you. So I believe that this is something that will help. It would require all of the department directors at the time of budget to clearly identify what's in a particular line item. And I gave you some examples on the back. One of them is contract services, and this is the finance department's contract services. We have Hinderleiter DeLamas. We pay $5,000 to them. We have Anita and Company for $1,000 a year. Vining Spark, $765 a year. That's for securities. New World Maintenance. I identified every one of the contracts we have, and that represents the amount of budget that I requested. So in a zero-based budget, this is what you would do. You would start at nothing, and you would build your budget and you would say, I need this much money because I have this many people and this is what they cost. I need this amount in benefits because this is what this many people cost in benefits. And you would just go down the line. The estimates would come in for utilities. You would say, we spent this much on utilities last year, and we estimate that utilities are going to go up 3% or 5%. And so it would be a tangible number that you could see last year and the percentage of increase, or you would see clearly identified expenditures, exactly what we're going to do based on contracts we have in place. And I brought this at council's request, and so I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay, any questions for Susan?
I have a question. First of all, I think this is a great idea. I was surprised it says some departments do this and some don't.
Yes, I've seen some departments who have actually gone to that level.
In this city?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's not been completely required. Many of the departments do justify down. I mean, we're at the point where we have cut so much they've had to do it. Mm-hmm. So we just haven't required it on every line item.
And then the other thing I would point out, again for the public, that so at this point we'll say contract services and you'll just say, well, it's $51,000. But with this new system providing the justification, you'd have to list the different components, and that's
exactly
good.
Exactly. Yes.
Now, but I'm wondering, when we go outside your department or outside of contract services to other things, I thought justification would mean that we would tell why, or would we simply just list the prices?
You would be listing the vendors that you have contracts with. Mm-hmm. You could list why.
To fulfill what need they're fulfilling?
Yes.
Okay. I think it's all a good idea.
Other questions? Anyone? Okay. Do we want a motion?
Move approval of D1.
Here, we often have cash sitting in the general fund and the enterprise operating revenue funds. And one of the practices that we have for the enterprise funds is to take that cash out of the operating fund and move it into the reserve fund. So the operating fund actually starts out with zero cash because the money's been shifted over into the savings account. It's not that it's not accessible. It just actually puts the operating fund in a position of working with the revenue that it gets. So what I had heard was that we should maybe look at doing this kind of thing for the general fund as well. The general fund did wind up with positive cash at the end of the 06-07 audit, and that money could have been transferred into the general fund accumulation fund. If council would like that to start happening and actually to continue happening with all the funds that are in that position and have accumulation funds, and those would be the general fund, water operating, sewer operating, and harbor operating. Those would be the ones that we could do this kind of thing with. So if council would like me to start doing that with the 07-08 fiscal year end, or even with the 07-08 fiscal year end, that's something that can happen. And I'll leave that to your decision.
Questions?
Accumulation reserve is anonymous, correct?
Yes.
Any other questions? Discussion?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Would you like to make a motion?
Well, all right, I'll move we direct staff to return with a resolution to adopt the practice of transferring excess cash to the accumulation funds at every fiscal year end, not only the general fund but all the enterprise funds as well.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. Item D6, and this one is GEM cars and trucks. And Melody, I think this one's yours.
Yeah, I guess I'll just take it away. My apology for not putting a cover memo in the front of this. I worked exhaustively editing this. I took it from 14 pages down to 8. And this is about, and I think what I'd like to do, I don't know if anyone's back there directing traffic on the cameras, but, oh, there. I'd like to just put this up here, but nobody's in the back, right? These are these little electric trucks. And if you come in tight just so the public could see what an electric little vehicle. Oh, thank you very much. There it is on the overhead. And these little electric trucks have attracted my attention because Cal Poly bought a fleet of them. And so all of their gardeners and a substantial number of gardeners and maintenance workers and all that were using these electric trucks. They plug into an ordinary outlet. And so I commissioned some students to do the report in fall of 07. And why I had to approach the revision is because, as you know, gas prices have gone up almost double since that time. So I had to do mathematics. So just as a quick run-through on these things, the thing to break it, they have a 40-mile range, and we only use them, according to Joe Woods, about 20 miles per day. And it's a 6-mile-long town. How much does it take to get to the park? They're inexpensive to buy. In fact, they cost less than the proposed GMC 1500s cost by about $4,500. So you have an upfront savings just on buying them. And then I used a conservative estimate of $4.50 per gallon. And I use that because I know that our trucks use gas at the corporate yard. And so we get it for a reduced price, but on the street right now it's $4.65 in Morro Bay. So $4.50 a gallon. And I also put in that you might spend $56 a year to power up an electric truck. And that's just being really honest about the fact that you have to plug it in. But I have an electric vehicle plugged in at home, and I have a $9 electric bill, so I don't know how I'm doing that. Then the Cal Poly Transportation Department told them that it takes about $500 to $600 per year to maintain. I don't even know what those charges are. But you can see in Figure 4, I think this is a remarkable chart, actually, when you see that these little electric trucks cost almost nothing in fuel, the $56, whereas a gas truck costs this much in fuel. So as we're talking about cost savings in this town, it became obvious to me that we should consider an alternative. So I knew that staff would be concerned about this, that, and the other thing. First of all, I've already confirmed the range. We can do any range of things that you need. And we also noticed that there's a little plug-in place down there at Cloisters. So if they feel worried about making it all the way back to the corporate yard a mile away, they could plug in. They also carry a payload of 1,100 pounds. It says here they go up and down hills at Cal Poly, and they've got more hills at Cal Poly than we certainly have in Morro Bay, especially if you're considering this for the, well, for anywhere. But the Parks Department would serve like Del Mar, Monte Young, down to Cloisters, and that's all flat level stuff. And then if we go on here, they also talked about the weather, and the price of these that I quoted you includes every single option for our employees, including heaters to keep them warm, rear window inserts to keep them out of the rain, and high low beam headlamps. And I don't know why the kids put those on. On reliability and durability, there's only like one moving part in an electric motor. It's the rotor that goes around and around. But there's some comments here about, you know, they haven't had to replace them. To be fair, though, I would say that after several years, like 7 or 8, it would be at least 7 or 8, but it would be in that 10-year period where we're saving all that money, you may have to replace the batteries. May have to. We don't know. But, for example, on my Prius, they won't guarantee it any longer than 8 years. And I don't know what the gym vehicle thing is on that. Money savings on page 8 of this report, we could potentially save about $35,000 over 10 years for each gas truck replaced by a GEM truck. So if we did two of them, we would save about $70,000 over 10 years. And this is mostly the kids doing this, and I had to just redo the math. To buy three GEMs, it will cost about $40,000. We were already going to spend $50,000, so it's not a question of money. in the purchase of it, but it would be a question of the enormous savings in gasoline over the next even year. They can be purchased at Iverson Dodge in Santa Maria. I would also say, too, that I've listened to two things today about oil and gasoline. One of them is that President Bush recommended that we open up offshore oil drilling, and the news reporter said that if we open up all the offshore leases and drilled for oil everywhere, it would last this country 6 months. And then this afternoon I was listening to KCBX while a man was talking about peak oil and whether or not we've gotten there, but he says you can't really rely on supply because even if we pull more out of the ground, we don't have the refineries. So I don't know that I want to be in this dicey situation about gasoline prices and what's going to happen to them. Some are talking about five at least and maybe stop. Some are talking about six. But I think this is a great way to save us money. So I'll take any questions or comments.
I just want to say it was so fun to read a report that had something positive and interesting and new and exciting.
Yeah, pretty little trucks.
My brother and his family just got back from Ireland where gas is $10 a gallon. So comments, questions
sure.
for Melody? It was a really interesting report. I mean, aside from being informational, it was just really interesting.
And well edited. Sorry. They had a lot of typos. I actually gave them a high grade. And when you start to edit some report that you gave a high grade to and realize you should have given it a C. But anyway.
Rick? Yeah, I wrote down some of my concerns regarding the practicality of GEM vehicles. And some of them are... What if we experience power outages? How do we charge them? The speed that they go, it would be less than a lot of the speed limits on the street. I wouldn't want to be in one in an accident, and there's no bags or anything like that in these kind of vehicles. One thing that's beneficial with the vehicles that we have is you can connect auxiliary power to them to run pumps or to start other vehicles or for many other things. And then if there's a, if we get a fleet of these things, then what if there's a problem at night when these things are charging up and we need to run them and depend on them? For a number of hours. Then there's, when you plug these things in, you're creating a carbon footprint somewhere, maybe not in Morro Bay, but you're running off the grid and you're creating a carbon footprint every time you charge something. So, what? then there's the disposals of the batteries, which is a big concern. And, I would recommend, I think, that rather than running off and buying a fleet of them, that go ahead and get one and try it out. Check out its practicality, its dependability.
Looking at some of them, and I looked at them in some not such great detail when we had a couple given to us that the Neighborhood Watch had, two GEM vehicles. And I was anxious to see how they would apply to their applications, and apparently it wasn't working out that well, so I was kind of getting more excited because maybe I'd have a chance to bring them over to our department. but it turned out that the maintenance wasn't there, and so maybe there were some bugs that the company's working on as far as what type of batteries that they're using, and I don't know what the technology is, if it's changing or not. That would be worth something to look at. And we also had a couple electric vehicles that we had a truck and we had another car that I think the city manager and the planning manager had, and I'd like to follow up and see what the conclusions were with those vehicles. Was it the charging station? Did they have bugs that they got worked out that they've advanced to a better technology? But the concept of having an electric vehicle, and I said this earlier in a previous meeting, that if it's task specific and there's an area that it's going to demonstrate to be really well at, it's going to meet our our specific needs there, then we should certainly look into it. If it's more of a vehicle that's going to be more of a diverse vehicle that's going to be able to respond to floods, going to respond to any kind of emergencies on outside of our department, maybe in the Public Works Department, we want to have that vehicle be a more sturdy vehicle, able to handle more more payload as far as tools, mm-hmm. equipment, that kind of thing, possibly a generator to run lights or things like that. So it depends on what the vehicles are going to be used for. But as far as the electric vehicle and the alternative source, that's a great idea. And I certainly would keep it on the table and see where it's going to apply. I like the idea of possibly bringing in one vehicle and having a look at it. But not without the research, I think. A little bit more as far as maybe what consumer products say as far as the safety, what is the reliability. What are the guys at Cal Poly actually coming across? I mean, so maybe it's going great, but there are some questions that maybe we could dig into and see how applicable they are for us. So I would be very open to going into a little more research before we take any more steps further.
Okay. Mr. Ambo, what do you think is the potential for use in your departments as well?
Well, we carry, you know, like if we have storms, we get down trees, you know, right. We have to haul away debris. A lot of times we have the power's out or we may have an electrical problem. We have to run generators at our pumps. They may be more problematic because we probably carry heavier loads and operate in
so there's no water. Applications that you think would be appropriate in your
department? I honestly think parks may be a more attractive alternative just because of the nature of the – we deal with more heavy construction.
Okay. All right, back to council. Betty, there you go.
Having read this study first about our space needs and seeing that the streets department has 6 trucks and they only have 2 personnel, that I thought might as well just give some trucks to parks rather than go and buy the new vehicles. So that's the basic money saver right there. If that's not a possibility, then I...
offices and things, you could shuttle between the buildings downtown in one of these things. A concern I have is if you leave the downtown, you go out to Del Mar Park, for example, that's a 40-mile-an-hour speed limit all the way out there in a 25-mile-an-hour vehicle. And then secondly, you then cross the freeway at either San Jacinto or Yerba Buena to take care of stuff out there. And... yeah, everybody's going to stop, and everybody knows to look for little electric vehicles, but I was out there the day the trolley got T-boned, and that's an awfully lot bigger chassis and everything, and that car that was going 65 miles an hour and hit that thing did a lot of damage. It would be very fatal if somebody got hit with one of those things.
Well, and also I think if you're loaded with some equipment, you're not going to reach 25 miles an hour of speed anyway.
So I think in... echoing some of the other things I've heard, I could see getting one and seeing where it would be appropriate, maybe run it up and down the Embarcadero. It would be good if you could keep it there like in that garage in that building we have at the parking lot down there rather than taking it out to the city yard. But same way with downtown. If you're going to shuttle between buildings, you know, the last time I was on the Cal Poly campus, nobody went faster than 25. You couldn't. And those things are wandering in and out of, you know, pedestrian pathways and things. Not sure I'd be – well, I did ride on the city's 2 GEM vehicles we got, they were okay in more or less residential-type streets. I'd hate to go out Main Street, but – and I know one of them, after a couple of years, developed charging problems. It wouldn't charge. And the other one, I don't know what happened to it, but they both died because they got them to use for the Harbor Festival, and they proved to be ultimately, after about 2 years, to be unsatisfactory. Might have been maintenance, might have been batteries in those days. I don't know. But I know that the police department did have, may still have, 2 of them. And then we had the 2 white pickup trucks. Mr. Hendricks had one, and Mr. Foos had the other. And those, of course, were Ford's answer to the EPA in order to be able to build SUVs. But those proved to be totally unsatisfactory.
And you are talking 10 years ago.
Yes.
At a minimum.
Well, batteries haven't changed all that much.
Mayor?
Well,
Mayor?
I
I was just trying to facilitate the conversation. It certainly appears that council is still interested in this subject matter, and it's definitely there. Staff's excited about it also. My suggestion would be is let us do that final research and bring back August 11th, looking exactly what the duties and what those trucks are used for instead of jumping into it. You certainly can, and we can just go forward with that, but let's make sure, you know, at least from a staff standpoint, that we research it and bring it back and make certain that we look at all the issues before that final decision. I don't think 1 month would matter, but that's certainly your prerogative if you want to give that direction tonight.
Well, that's where I was going to go, too. I was going to say I think that there's certainly a wonderful idea, and certainly technology has improved since the last ones that we got. It's improving every day. I mean, now all of a sudden electric cars can be built again. So that's kind of exciting. But I agree, we need to figure out where we can use them safely and appropriately. So, yes, I would like to see that further research, you know, whatever it is, if there's different kinds even out there that might be more reliable or less reliable, I don't know. Melody, did you want to respond to any of Rick's concerns? Because I saw you writing notes on that.
I wouldn't use that. In fact, our own trucks, I know, use that sometimes. The other thing, too, about I've never asked for a fleet. I would never even suppose a fleet of these. But the students do quote Cal Poly people in here in about three or four places I've seen. They thoroughly researched this with Cal Poly. And I have to tell you, I've been at Cal Poly for 33 years, and I know that they don't do things fast. They considered this inside and out. They tested this puppy inside and out. They test drove these things. They got a fleet discount, I'm sure. They do not do things fast. They're slower than we are. And so I don't think they've been completely vetted. You don't need any charging station. You plug them into the wall like behind us. I wouldn't even talk about a carbon footprint and compare them to a GMC 1500. And there's another option, actually, that you can get that would provide a second power source because they do hold so much power that you can just get another plug put in them. My Prius has a separate battery in the back, actually, that charges things.
What about the safety issue? I mean, do they come with any kind of...
Well, I think that would be a thing that would be engaged in this further staff research would be the safety issue. They only run 25 miles an hour on the flat, so...
that can be a liability if you got a bunch of cars going fast around you, though. So,
well, and I think they have seat belts. But, see, I can't even swear that they have seat belts. Yeah. Safety was never one of the criteria that we put in here. Although they talked extensively with our staff, and I guess they didn't mention it then, but I think we really have to consider money in this. And so are you ready for a motion?
Sure.
And then you can amend it all different
right
ways. I would like to direct staff to... I would like to make a motion that would direct staff to contact Iverson Dodge about two gem trucks for our parks and cover all the issues that staff is concerned with, including the safety issue, probably a guarantee issue too, a warranty, because that wasn't covered in the report. I'd be curious about their warranty. And to bring that back to us before buying two gasoline trucks.
Second.
Discussion.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm ready to vote for two. I would like staff to contact them and take a look at what uses we have in the city that they'd be most suited for, and maybe we consider getting one and trying it. You know, as I say, it may be that you don't want to use it for some things that they would use one of the trucks for. I know, for example, our street folks are the water guys. A lot of times they have to run into San Luis, the drop of a hat and things. So they have those big inverters they run that run the pumps and stuff.
This isn't for the water guys.
Yeah, this would not be appropriate for those departments. No. But it could very well be for parks. But I think I'd like to see staff sit down and work out how they would use them, some sort of game plan where they would be best suited, and maybe get one of them to try it.
Well, again, Mr. Pierce, I only directed staff to contact them about two gems, not to purchase them. I'm sure they'll bring it back to us, their further report about it. Also, I said two rather than one in case we can kind of swing some deal. Here's a city, you know, think you're how it works kind of thing.
Well, I wasn't talking about what the gem vehicles could do, but how what the city would do with them. In other words, would we use it for the facilities person, or do we envision the guys with lawnmowers on them or whatever? Because we do have people that drive around that van to go from one building to the next. Would that be the best use for this thing? Or that's all I'm saying, is that staff sit down and figure out just what uses we might have for it.
I'd be willing to amend my motion.
That may make the number clear, too.
Yes, I'd be willing to amend my motion to ask staff also to list possible uses and limits on use.
And is that okay with you, Betty?
Call the question.
Okay. No, you seconded. I was asking if that was okay.
That's fine.
Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I didn't get to comment.
He needs to comment.
You commented a whole bunch.
Yeah, but I still had further comment after the
other. Okay. All right.
Like I stated previously, I'll go for the supporting of getting one of the vehicles, trying it out, seeing how it fits and what the capabilities are. So that's where I'm at with that.
So that was an aye?
I'm sorry?
That was an aye? Yes, to the motion?
Well, if we're talking about the one.
We didn't give it a number.
Yeah,
we just said he was going to.
We got rid of all the numbers.
Then all we're going to do is investigate it. Yeah. We're not going to ask for any number.
Right. We might ask about discounts.
Well, that's I'm just not supporting.
So is that an aye? Yes?
Yeah, it's narrow enough. Okay. I'll take it for an aye. Yeah, okay.
Okay, that was a unanimous 5-0. Took a while, but I think we got there. Okay. All right, next, number D7, setting a date for the workshop on the Management Partners Report.
Good evening, Council. Staff's asking you this evening to set a date for Wednesday, August 13th, from 1 to 5 p.m. to begin working on the recommendations from the Management Partners Report. As you'll recall, the report contains 36 recommendations, including expenditure control strategies, revenue creation strategies, and long-term strategies. The intent of this workshop would be to review the recommendations, determine a priority for those recommendations, confirm a timeline for analysis. We are suggesting under the workshop format that the meeting be open to the public, but with no public comment, as was our goals workshop. I'm happy to answer questions, and I hope we can set the date Wednesday, 13th. I believe all the council members are available for that date.
Okay. Everybody available on the 13th?
I am, but I would like to see a good portion of this closed because I want to talk about personnel.
And I think the city attorney said that would be appropriate.
Yes, we'll have to set up two separate agendas and make certain, though, that we are discussing items that fall underneath the Brown Act under personnel exceptions. So maybe we'll start and closed on the issues that we can and then move to open for the open session items.
Okay. All right. So need a motion on that, or are we just accepting it?
I'd like to have a motion.
Okay. I move we hold a workshop on Wednesday, August 13th, to discuss the Management Partners Report, etc.
Discussion.
I'm sorry, discussion.
Do we know where we're going to hold it yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, thank you.
And I don't want it to be limited to the Management Partners. I want it to be anything else that we may bring in that we think is.
We've already seen that a recommendation in Management Partners has lent itself to something similar but not the same that we might be considering anyway. I mean, to me, it was a jumping-off place. It was not the end of the road. It's basically the little direction sign that points us down the road. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I see it.
So you are seeing it as there will be another workshop.
I would say we could probably have several more the way things will be going.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Rick?
Yeah, I think, you know, we paid a lot of money for this. Let's cover their suggestions first, and we'll be lucky if we get through that day. We may not even finish that part up. But, I mean, if you've got other ideas for cost-saving measures, we'd be stupid not to look at them. So I think this is a process that will carry on for as long as it needs to be.
And if I could jump in here and just say that since we received Management Partners, we've had several suggestions that actually went beyond or more specifically, and I actually was thinking that's what we were going to talk about in closed session.
Right.
So
all
I think
I'm
it is a good.
Is that we start with that as the basis.
Yes.
I don't want to introduce new topics that are entirely separate from Management Partners.
Not new topics, but it's all that
Well, yeah.
Streamlining.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. And D8. Rescission of council action of June 9th pertaining to granting any permit or entitlement for the construction of a wireless telecommunications facility at 545 Shasta and scheduling a public hearing for reconsideration of the appeal of the Planning Commission's approval of a wireless telecommunications facility at 545 Shasta. You get the award for the longest titles.
I do.
Thank you. Rob.
On July 8th, just a few days ago, we received a letter from an attorney for Ann Travers and Barbara Nordine, alleging that the city had violated the Brown Act at the June 9, 2008 City Council meeting. The letter alleges that the city failed to give proper notice for the approval of the construction of the wireless telecommunications facility at 545 Shasta Avenue, which was part of the settlement agreement. Although technically the written notice wasn't given, they did have actual notice, and they were at that meeting and voiced their concerns regarding the approval of that project and the approval of the settlement conference. I still feel it's, instead of trying to fight that battle with the attorney, it's best to go back and rescind our action that we took at that meeting and schedule a meeting to correct the deficiencies and give the actual notice. And we'll give notice not only to the two appellants in that case, but also any neighbors within the 300-foot radius of the cell tower location. And these changes were made, these cure and correct letters that you received from attorneys was part of the 2007 changes that were made to the Brown Act. So it's fairly recently that allows attorneys to make these allegations. And if found wrong, they're entitled to attorney's fees. So it's much better, in my opinion, to go back. It's not going to be difficult to do. We'll give the notice. However, it has to be done in 30 days. So that's probably the biggest issue and why it's in front of you, is to rescind that action and any action that was taken with regards to granting any approvals, but also to schedule within 30.
It's in front of me, but that's the day I'm returning from a trip that I'd planned for this break.
Okay, anybody else that has a problem with that?
I will be out of town on that date, but I will be here on the 28th.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm getting so old, I don't make any plans after a week.
Either date works for me.
Okay.
Point me in a direction, yeah, and I'll get there.
Yeah, I can go either one, too.
We can't do a quick little one on August 5th, the next day? If I had my plane reservations, I could tell you, but I left.
Yes, home. We have till August 8th, so you could do it on August 5th, 6th, 7th, just August 8th.
Just a quick little.
Do we have?
Sure. I mean, it's all. I would imagine less than an hour.
Do we have any advisory board meetings that week, the week of August 5th? Fourth.
Well, we've got planning on Monday.
And recreation parks.
Excuse me.
Sorry, I'm sorry. Or if we agreed to meet after planning or something. You know, I know I'm getting back by then.
Yeah. Well, Andrea, were there any other advisory board meetings that week?
Yes, Recreation and Parks and Harbor Advisory Board are both on the 7th.
On the
7th. Which is a Thursday.
And does one of those meet here?
They both meet here, one at 5, one at 7 p.m.
Mm. So we could do that at 4? Would people be available on the 7th at 4? That way we've got AGP here. What I'm trying to avoid is, you know, having to set them up for an hour someplace.
Thursday.
It's a Thursday? So 4 o'clock on Thursday the 7th?
Is anybody going to that CEQA climate change in Santa Barbara? At $75 a head?
Some of our staff may. I'm not
Bruce,
quite sure.
Bruce, did you have a comment?
I just wanted to, if we're going to set that date for the 7th, or what, can we continue the CDBG hearings on those planning and technical assistance grants that date, too?
Oh, okay. Yeah, because
that gives us a week. It's first come, first serve, so it gives us.
Absolutely, okay.
Gives
all
us
right,
a week.
So
is that what these things are? I don't remember.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, okay.
So rather than the following Monday council meeting, you're saying to move the CDBG stuff to this 7th date as well?
Sure.
Yeah, it could be. Days could help on those. So. All right, so let's. We'll have a short meeting from 4 to 5 o'clock on Thursday, the 7th of August.
And I would say if Mr. Merritt can find your schedule, that you actually make Monday your first priority, and so it won't be such a long day. And then have the 7th as a backup.
I'm not available on the 7th. I don't know if I need to be there. Planning could probably do it, but I won't be there.
Okay.
And just so you know, I'll be gone as well that whole week.
Oh, my goodness.
I start mine on the 7th, so the 4th, 5th, 6th would work. But
all right, so the 4th, the only problem with the 4th is we don't know whether Melody's going to be here or not. Well, Betty's out of town, too, though.
Yeah.
Well, you still have 3, and then you might have 4.
Well, okay.
A quorum is 3, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So we're still doing it on the 7th?
That we continue. Do I have to do them by title? B1 and B2 to August 4th.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay.
And it. You'll make the motion for this one, rescinding all your action pursuant to the recommendation in a paragraph 1 to the date certain.
I so move.
Second.
All in favor?
No, I'd like someone to make the whole motion for the record.
All those words. You just like hearing all those words again.
I move that we rescind the council action of June 9th, 2008, pertaining to granting any permit or entitlement for the construction of a wireless telecommunications facility at 545 Shasta Avenue, and schedule a public hearing for the reconsideration of the appeal of the Planning Commission's approval of a wireless telecommunications facility at 545 Shasta Avenue on Monday, August 4th at 5 o'clock.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you for reading that, Betty. Okay, future agenda items?
I have one.
Okay.
I would like a discussion regarding placing monies obtained from, they're still Dynergy, right?
Dynergy.
I'm sorry?
Dynergy.
Placing monies obtained from Dynergy power plant lease agreement to the general fund and the harbor fund, placed in the reserve fund, because I feel a need that we need to start weaning ourselves off that. And so I'd like to have a discussion regarding that.
For which fiscal year are you talking about?
For the next budget year.
Okay. Not this one where we're already spending them.
Right.
Okay.
For the sake of discussion, I'll join that.
Okay.
So
I'll
we
go
get
with
it there.
Sure. Okay. And anything else?
Do I need to agendize the discussion about the master fee schedule, or... Do we need to do that as an agenda item that I brought up, bringing it up all at the same time?
Or is that just something that...
Staff will check in if, in fact, there's a resolution that was passed to that effect. But if not, then we'll take the direction to start that coming back on a yearly basis.
I believe it was a resolution.
I think it was, too. If it was, in fact, a resolution, then we'll have to bring it to change.
Could we not put that in the resolution we're bringing forward, that Susan's bringing forward?
With their changes, yes, we could. Yes.
Okay. Why don't you do that? Then I won't make it as an agenda item here.
Okay. Anything else? Anyone? Okay. I took the closing. Oh, first of all, I want to remind people that right after this meeting and after this meeting, as it repeats during the week, you can watch the workshop that we had last Saturday on CAL FIRE. It's very informative. We would like your input, so please do pay attention to that and then come to our meeting when we decide what we're going to do about that.
Madam Mayor, could I make one more interjection? I forgot to thank Jack Smith and the residents that put on the National Slaloms competition this past Saturday, and they did a wonderful job. I haven't heard of any concerns, but I know the people that participated were very excited.
That's good. The closing quote tonight is from Bill Boucher, which I thought was really appropriate. Something he said at his party the other night. He said, "There seem to be some unhappy people here, but if you can't be happy and moreover,